This is off the WGN soundtrack, now available on Arista Records and Tapes. Hi, everybody. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you have a problem with this?
Oh, yeah. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the Thursday edition of our show.
Nice low voice.
That's my real voice. This voice I'm using, this squeaky
one. This is your
one.
Radio voice?
Yeah, I just use this for the radio.
He calls this one approachable.
Right. My deep voice is not so approachable. People would be scared of it, but this voice is the one I've chosen to use, Wendy.
I bet this weekend you're going to use the deep one because it's your anniversary weekend.
Yes. Yes. I will use my Barry White voice. Put on a kimono and let's dance. That's what I'll say.
Oh, Terry, have a great weekend.
She's a very lucky lady.
She is.
She is a very lucky lady.
And you're a lucky man.
Today is our 25th wedding anniversary, my wife Terry and mine. And I can't tell you how fast 25 years goes. It doesn't make sense. Like, the more I've thought about it this week, that event took place 25 years ago. My brain won't accept it. There's no way in the world that could have been 25 years ago.
What do you remember from the actual wedding? Because, you know, Kevin, our producer, and his lovely fiance, Sarah, will be getting married in September. And I was talking to him about our wedding in the office. And I honestly, my dad wasn't around to walk me down the aisle, so my brother did. I felt like I floated down the aisle.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, all bets are off on your wedding day. Like, you think you kind of have life figured out and what's what, and then that day, because it is, I mean, I know people say it's the woman's day, and, you know, it's probably, I have to say this, my wife made most of the decisions for our wedding and then has done the same for the past 25 years, thankfully.
Yeah, right. You need somebody to take the wheel.
I would say, let's have M&M's for dinner, and that's not a good dinner. So she makes all the big decisions. And all the little decisions, and I just show up mostly. And it was like I had always wondered what that day would be like, and it far exceeded any expectations.
That was my question to you. Did it exceed your expectations?
Oh, so much so. Really did.
I am a bit of a control freak, and Jim's sister Sheila, my sister-in-law, was late for the pictures at my mom's house before the wedding pictures, you know, before the ceremony. She was late, and Wendy today would be freaking out.
Right.
Wendy that day said, okay, well, just take your time, be safe.
Oh, and that's not like you.
I know.
That
it's like
not
nothing
like
was, and that was before I drank.
Yeah. Huh.
It's just, I was not going to let anything ruin my day, because you have people that say, you know, it's your day, remember to have fun. Oh, I remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what was strange? We got married outside, and I mentioned this yesterday. We saved up for a long time to be able to afford the wedding that we wanted, and we did it outside. We lived on the lake at the time. The last apartment in Rogers Park, there's a street called East Lake Terrace, which is the last apartment in Chicago before you get to Evanston, and it kind of juts out over the lake. And we got married in
a courtyard or something like that?
Yeah, it's essentially, it's like a parking lot, but it's right on the lake. But that day, we had it all decorated with Italian lights, and there was a band and, 105 of our closest family and friends. And there was this moment there at the end. I mean, everything was great. There wasn't a single down moment. Everything was perfect. And my parents had these family friends that I have known my entire life. And I'm not going to say their names, but I never saw even a second of real intimacy between them. I never saw them hold hands. I never saw them kiss each other. I never saw them put their arm around each other. They seemed to be happily married, but there was no real physicality to it at all. And then at our wedding, they were dancing and they were all over each other.
Oh.
And I never saw anything like it before or after, and it just kind of startled me. And it made me so happy that I've known these people for all those years, and I never saw anything like that. And
well, they don't like public display of affection, maybe.
I bet that's it. But what happened that day that they just went, you know what? Let's hold each other and let's dance and let's kiss each other. That was, and it was, I know you go, well, the champagne must have been flowing. Mm-mm.
No, but when you see a couple starting their lives together, it makes you think back to your wedding.
Yeah.
And you get all warm inside.
I bet that's part of it. And then the advice that was given to me by a friend of mine, there's a guy I used to do stand-up comedy with named Jim Underdown, who a couple of weeks before the wedding at a softball game said, can I give you the best advice in the world? And I said, sure. And he goes, during the wedding, at some point during the wedding or the reception, just take a step back and look around and realize what's going on. because he said it that day flies by and every day since has flown by. But he goes, just take it all in and imagine the fact that all these people that you care about and care about you and your wife are all there for you. And I did. There was this specific moment where there was 1,000 things happening. And I go, make that moment happen right now. And I just looked around and I went, wow, this is so perfect.
That's great advice. Kevin, you should do that. You're getting teary.
My God. It was like at the time,
so
we're playing softball and he tells me this advice and I go, all right, Jim, I'll do that. And I just filed it away. Like, there's not going to be time to just look around and go, this is fun. But I made sure that it happened. And boy, was that great advice.
Was it like in a movie where when you step back, it's like it was slowed down so you could just take it all in?
There's a movie term called rack focus where I'm sure you've seen it, where things get like they're close, but they get farther away and bigger. So that's what was happening, is even though we were in a confined area, it just became this huge, massive area. And I went, wow, all these people from all the key moments of my life were all here for this. And that was great.
You know? And can you believe it was 25 years ago today?
No.
And you're just not even going to do that joke. Oh, my God, we've been married for 25 years. Only feels like 8 years underwater.
No.
I hate people say that.
I'm not. No, it was the best decision of my life. I mean, I could not have done better under any circumstances. There's no way.
You're so sweet. 312-981-7200. Some wedding day advice, kind of in honor of Bill's 25th anniversary, Bill and Terry's, and Kevin's getting married soon. So, Chip, hang on. We'll talk to you. 312-981-7200. Oh, this is a great wedding dance song.
Sure.
You had this at your wedding?
We did not.
Celebrate.
We celebrated, but
Come
we did
on.
Not sing the song.
All right.
And Lionel Richie was there. We should have had him do it.
I heard Lionel Richie has been invited to Kevin's wedding.
He's coming.
Not Matt Bubala, though.
Nope. Nope.
Hey, Chip, you were on hold. We were talking about our wedding days. I, honest to God, felt like I floated down the aisle. Bill, you enjoyed your wedding ceremony. What did you do?
Well, when I basically, this end of September this year, the 30th, will be my 32nd wedding anniversary.
Congrats.
That's great.
Yes. Her dad walked her down the aisle. She's approaching the altar, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, oh, my goodness. And she gets to the altar. I turn my head to her and say, you look beautiful. She turns to me and said, your hair's a mess.
Beautiful.
That's how we roll. I mean, you know, I think we're more honest.
Yeah, by far.
I said, we always joke about it to this day. Even 32 years later, we always joke about it. You're beautiful. Your hair's a mess. You're beautiful. Your hair's a mess.
Well, happy anniversary in October, Chip. Thank you for calling. Another wedding memory or thought or soon-to-be memory. Hi, Dave.
How you doing? Great show.
Thanks,
happy
Dave.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
For that gentleman over there.
No, it's me. It's my anniversary.
Yes.
My daughter got married 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I was so busy. Wanted to see everybody was so happy and everybody having a good time. I keep going table to table. One thing I regret, I never danced with my wife at my daughter's wedding.
Oh, no.
And, you know, I didn't realize that until the next day. I feel bad about it. But, you know, it's a great wedding. Me and her have been married 28 years. We've been through everything. She had 2 bad hips and everything. We were waiting for this, and I didn't dance with her. But she understands.
But now, why didn't she come up to you and say, honey, let's have a dance at our daughter's wedding? So
I don't know. But maybe she couldn't find me. I kept walking around, and seeing everybody's having a good time. And I don't know. I never asked her. I didn't want to ask. We watched the tapes and everything of the wedding already. And I can't. I watched it, but can we go someplace she brings it? I can't watch it anymore. I feel so bad.
Well, take her out dancing.
We've been married 28 years. We raised 2 good daughters, and now I got 1 more to go, and I would live my life dream, see my daughters get married. That's the only thing I want in my life.
Dave, do you want to
get married?
Do you want to bring your wife to Kevin's wedding and have a dance there? We can fix that up.
Oh, like your partner? He didn't invite her. Wife? He invite me either?
Oh no.
Dave, why don't you take your wife out dancing on your anniversary this year?
I'm planning that. I'm going to dance with her.
Just do it in your living room. Who cares?
I'm going to dance with her.
Aww.
I know.
You're so
sweet. I'm
going to
dance with a special moment. I'm not even going to tell her. If I live in a restaurant, I'm just going to give her up, and I owe you this one.
Good.
Oh, you're making me tear up. That's beautiful, Dave. Happy soon-to-be anniversary, and don't live with regrets.
I won't. You know, just, you know, she's one of a kind. She's my honey.
We like to hear that.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank
you, Dave. Best of luck to both of you.
You're tearing up.
It's just sweet.
Do you want me to get some Foggy Mold? I can spray you down.
What is that going to do?
I don't know.
You have to ruin the moment, don't you? Tom, you have some fantastic advice.
Oh, I ran a DJ service for about 20 years, and the one piece of advice I always told the groom was never to mess up the bride's makeup, especially the eye makeup. I said, because we always did that bouquet and garter toss and the cake cutting ceremony and stuff. And I always told him, don't screw up her eye makeup. You'll never hear the end of it. And I was at the Marlac House in Oak Park about 15 years ago. Very expensive wedding. We're up on the second floor, if anybody's ever been there. But the groom decided to pull, during the cake cutting ceremony when he fed her some cake, he decided to pull a James Cagney smash in the face, grind it up into her face.
With a grapefruit?
With the cake?
No, Cagney used a grapefruit.
Yeah.
It wasn't a grapefruit
cake
present.
Literally whole fist in the face and literally rotated it around a little bit.
Oh, no.
I would have kicked that groom in
That's
the shin.
Terrible.
If that was me, I mean, that would have been it. I would have called off the whole wedding.
Well, that was it. The bride literally just had this look of shock in her face. She disappeared. We never saw her till the end of the night.
Oh, no.
She didn't want anything to do with them.
That is the best advice. Even to this day, after I've put my makeup on, if we're going out, Jim will go give me a kiss on the cheek, and I pull away because it's like, get my lips, not my makeup.
Yeah, you can smear the lipstick. That's fine. Don't touch the eyes. You just call an attorney and get it over with.
Great advice, Tom. Thank you very much.
He worked the Cagney wedding. That's a great wedding to work.
What? Only you would understand the Cagney reference.
Well, you've
reference.
Seen that scene, right, with the grapefruit? But you're not supposed to do that at your wedding.
Everybody does that.
We did not do that, for the record.
We just gently gave each other a piece of cake.
Gently's all right.
The funniest thing at my brother's wedding is my sister-in-law put cake on her tongue and like stuck it out like, nah.
Yeah.
And my brother took it off her tongue and ate it. That was a great wedding shot.
For pay-per-view.
It was silly. Hey, Sarah, this is our last call on the whole wedding thing. It's Bill's 25th anniversary. He and his wife, Terry, congratulations. And what did you feel like on your wedding day?
Well, last year was our 30th.
Oh, congratulations.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. I know what you mean, Bill. It's like, wow, how did we get to be 30? But at our wedding, we have the big Catholic wedding, with the big altar and everything, my childhood church. And the priest, instead of doing the repeat after me, he made us memorize all those.
Wow.
And he went off the altar into the aisle so that we had to face the guests.
You had to face the congregation? First. Your phone's breaking up a little bit. You had to face the church?
Oh, I'm sorry. We had
church?
To face the congregation, yes.
Okay.
The people who were in the church. And the most amazing thing, Victor started with his, and then I did my. It was like we were the only two people in the world. I mean, everything else just blacked out around me. And when
and
I
then you fainted?
Mine, no. But when I finished mine, all of a sudden I heard people clapping and everybody came into view. Mm.
And it brought it back into the whole thing.
That's, beautiful.
That is
the coolest thing.
That's awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing that. That's really a
that's
touching
so nice.
Moment. I wish you a very happy anniversary. You guys really make a great couple.
Oh, that's so nice of you. Thank
for
you.
For people who don't
lucky.
Know your wife very well, you know how wickedly funny Bill is. Terry's just as funny,
She's
if not funnier.
She's funnier and darker than I could ever imagine.
You are a match made in heaven.
I agree. Thank you for that. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a big show for you today. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Steve, really quickly, this morning's biggest story wasn't really a story, was it?
No, it doesn't look as if it was. And it was another one of those situations, we're in a new era of social media and fast communication and hyper-alertedness. I mean, I think all these things. So we were getting indications of what they were calling an active shooter. We fall into this lingo, and it really, I don't like it, but... Now there's this phrase, active shooter, at Andrews Air Force Base.
Not even were investigating reports of an active shooter. On their website, it was like there is an active shooter situation.
And then the other phrase is shelter in place. Everyone is going to shelter.
I never heard that until today.
No. Oh, really?
It was honest to God.
It came into sort of vogue after the Boston Marathon bombing, when they were, you know, around town trying to find the people. And it was a elegant phrase then. It really worked. They wanted everyone to stay in their houses, shelter in place. But now it's become this sort of jingoistic term, and lockdown is another, and all of these things come into play. Now, but the other side of it is that what was being reported everywhere was being reported based on a tweet, an official tweet from Andrews Air Force Base. So, I mean, it was, you can fault the media for a lot of things, but not this one. When you've got an Air Force Base saying, you know, that we're on lockdown because of this, that's something you can go with. Even the Homeland Secretary was talking about it, saying that there was an unfortunate situation occurring. So
no one should blame the media for anything. Not for situations like this. We are getting reports. That's what you say.
Right.
I would rather know that something is potentially happening.
Well, that's the thing. You have to listen to it correctly,
right,
and carefully, and we have to convey it carefully, because anytime these things happen now, it's instant, and you know it's going to be different than the first reports. Anyway, turns out there was a drill at Andrews Air Force Base, an active shooter drill. Someone saw something out a window and, you know, did what they should have. They called and reported it, but Peter didn't tell Paul or something, and Andrews Air Force Base reacted as if it was real, while they should have been aware that there was a test going on.
But Steve, now we've had a couple of incidents, and I don't know if there is one specific trusted source or sources. I know some news media outlets have a little more respect than others, so I'm guessing up in the newsroom, if you see certain news outlets reporting something, you kind of take it as gospel, don't you?
But ABC is one, you know, ABC is very careful. And
AP, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I mean, BuzzFeed, not quite as much,
right.
TMZ. But they often turn out to be very, you know, correct as
right.
well.
So you imagine up in the newsroom when you see a source at that level reporting on something, you say to yourself, well, certainly they must have checked it out, so it's got to
sure.
be accurate.
Yeah, but
you
still double check, don't you? Do you always go with just one credible source? Don't you kind of check it out before you?
No, I mean, we're an Associated Press radio station, an ABC station, so they are us. If they've checked something out and reported it, you know, we'll say that they were reporting it the implication there is that they have checked it out. You know, if I say NBC is reporting, that means they have checked it out, and according to their standards, this is what's happening.
Right.
The theater shooting in Germany, if you recall, we were saying German public television or German, the magazine Bild, is reporting. So then you have to listen to those sources and say, okay, I know them, I trust them. This may or may not be more reliable than other reports.
And just listen carefully to the newscasts. That's what you do in breaking news, because I don't know, I'm one that wants the information as it comes out. I don't like to be shielded by anything. And then that's what happens these days.
Well, we're too quick. You know, we are too quick because, and it's not always just a matter of wanting to be first. It's like, this is going to be another big thing. Oh my God, here we
right.
go again. You know, we're looking at it through that filter. You know, I wrestle with some of my colleagues and others about, you know, we get reports of schools being on a lockdown or a soft lockdown. Well, you know what? That happens almost every day, a couple times a day.
I didn't realize it happened so frequently.
In this metropolitan area. I'm exaggerating a little bit maybe, but it's not unusual at all. And what is incredibly unusual, almost unheard of, is that a lockdown results in a bad situation at the school. It's always out of an abundance of caution, and, you know, almost never does anything ever happen. You know, there could be someone, a domestic argument two blocks down, and a school will go on soft lockdown. So should we say that? Why would we say that? There's no real threat to the school.
Right.
It's just, it's one of those jingoistic terms again. You know, the kids are on lockdown.
I have a question for you. So this was an active shooter drill going on.
Right.
And because that's in essence like we having a fire drill here and another news source reporting there's a fire at Tribune Tower.
Well,
wasn't there a memo that, I mean, because whenever
that's the thing, it'd be Judy, what's your name? Kathy, Judy, Wendy?
No, but let me just finish my thought here. If there's a fire drill going on here, or a lot of times we have EAS, like tornado drills and stuff, we're all made aware of it, so no one is thinking other than a drill.
What's worse than what you said, it'd be like the Tribune Tower having a fire drill, and then the Tribune reporting the building was on fire.
Right.
Because
that's in-house.
Andrews Air Force Base was having a drill, and then they reported that they had a shooting situation.
That's embarrassing.
Well, it's just a cautionary tale for all of us every time one of these things comes up.
Steve, the other thing, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but I'd love to hear your comment on it, is when we were growing up and you had the news at 5, 6, and 10, and if something major would happen, sometimes they would break into a television show to tell you that something major had happened. But for the most part, throughout the day, you got your news at 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and 10 o'clock. Whereas now, everybody refers to it as a 24-hour news cycle because it is. There are stations, countless stations devoted only to news. So they're all trying to get a jump on each other with any major story. And I think where it hurts the news business and then the public as a result of it is everybody's trying to outguess each other on numbers of people injured or killed. And a lot of times you'll see a number right off the bat that's not even close to the actual number.
But those
number.
Are reports. I don't think people speculate, they're do not they, make, Steve?
Right. They're not just imagining a number, but they're in such a hurry to get a number to report that it's almost unfair because it's not always an accurate number.
Well, we measure the severity of a situation by the number of people killed or injured. That's our yardstick. So when something happens and we know there are fatalities, you know, that steps it up. And when you have someone saying that we're expecting, you know, 20 people, the
Pulse nightclub,
shooting
20.
Started with 20.
Yeah.
But then there are others saying that there will be more. I mean, I think when you hear it, you just have to know that that's a very preliminary figure. Going back to the Germany theater thing was so unusual. And a red flag for me was they were talking about all these injured, but no fatalities. And it just didn't add up that someone could shoot that many people, but no one killed. And as it turned out, it's not what happened at all.
I don't remember that. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, early on they were saying several dozen people injured or something to that effect, but no report of any fatalities, and it just didn't make sense that so many people could be shot.
When you up in the newsroom hear that, and I know you said that's a little bit suspicious, but do you say to yourself, is that because they're trying to get an accurate number and that's why they're holding off on reporting a number, or do you just say something else is going on?
It just seemed like something else was going on. Yeah. It just didn't add up. I mean, they don't ever give firm numbers right away, but if there are fatalities, it's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Someone has just texted, you still need to vet the story before you do reckless broadcasting. And if I may comment on that, we here at WGN, especially in the newsroom and Steve Bertrand, vet as much as possible. And again, I don't feel it's reckless broadcasting. If you're listening to WGN and some news is breaking and you hear a little snippet, you're going to turn over to a news station to find out more. So be confident and comfortable that we will cover it. And as it's reported, that's what we do.
We don't have people from WGN at Andrews Air Force Base or outside of Frankfurt, Germany, or in, you know, Istanbul. We have associations with other news organizations who do. And so that's why when we report from ABC or the Associated Press, in a way that is an extension of us, and they are... I mean, if they're reporting it, our assumption is that they've confirmed it.
Right. And I don't feel that's reckless broadcasting at all.
Well, no one with any credibility, yourself included, Steve, wants to give out numbers that are inaccurate. You're not in the business to try to fool people with numbers.
Or any detail that's inaccurate.
Right.
You don't want to have to do a retraction of what you've just said.
Sure.
I mean, but
But remember, too, though, like what I said earlier, the marker for how bad something is how many deaths and injuries are killed. So as soon as you hear that there's a shooting at an airport in Turkey or a bombing, the next question is, how bad is it?
Right.
The way we measure that is not by how much monetary damage was done to it. It's by how many people were killed or hurt. And so that's why there's pressure to have at least a preliminary number pretty quickly so that we can gauge just how severe of an incident this is.
And you are so good. Everyone up in that newsroom is so good. You know, we have breaking news. Here's what we know at this point. Mm-hmm. And just give like a need to know basis at this point before any victims or fatalities happen. So you're doing a great job is what I'm saying. And I don't feel it's reckless broadcasting. I would like to know that something's developing.
Well, yeah, I don't like it. I don't like when we have to say you know, pull something back. And you know, right. Everyone's wrestling with how to do it the best way, but it's just kind of where we live right now.
And just to summarize, nothing happened, and that's a good thing. You don't want an active shooter situation in Maryland. It's better that nothing's happened.
How could they not know on their own base?
That's peculiar.
That is really bizarre to me.
Okay, well, you know, put yourself in their shoes. They, you know, they tweeted out, and it wasn't a press release. They were tweeting out to other people at Andrews Air Force Base. And again, everyone is extremely cautious, if not frightened right now, to help protect everyone.
And Joe Biden was supposed to take off from there, so I can see the concern.
You know? Sure.
I mean, definitely. Yeah. It's scary, but we have to be informed, that's all. So listen carefully.
We're
to
running
the news.
Downhill all the time now, and it's just the slightest trip, and, you know, things take off.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. We'll take a quick break. We have more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I have to confess something.
What do you want to confess?
I said this to you off the air. Honest to God, till today's report during the Cochrane show this morning, Steve Grzanich had said shelter in place. I'm a bit of a news junkie. I never heard that before.
Oh,
I didn't know what
did?
That meant. Shelter in place.
Steve's right. I don't remember ever hearing it until the Boston Marathon. I don't know that the term existed. It probably did before then, but
if I'm just hearing it, shelter in place, I don't know what that means. Stay in your home. I know what that means.
Yeah. I don't know why they chose that wording. Maybe it sounds a little more deliberate, doesn't it? Although if you don't know what it means,
yeah,
then what good
know.
Does it
shelter
do?
Shelter in place. It's a place of, honest to God, I heard it this morning going, what does that even really mean?
Okay, so remember when it came up in Boston, it was when the city was shut down that day.
Yes.
You know, when they're looking for the guys. So they were telling everyone, don't get on the mass transit. Don't go to school. Don't drive your car. Shelter in place. Stay where you are.
Stay where you are makes more sense to me than shelter in place. I have to say it.
It's not good lingo.
It has a military sound to it, Steve. Do we know? Is that the derivation of it? Is it something
I don't
military?
Know. I don't know.
I'm not sure. But Boston was the first time I remember hearing it.
Never heard it.
And for some reason, the way that it was said made me kind of understand it. But I could see where if you hadn't heard it before, you go, I'm not sure
what that means.
Yeah.
And I feel stupid saying that, but I'm being honest, and I do follow news. I'm a news junkie, and I honestly, this morning, I was like, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm. That's it. I want to just quickly, and this is mostly for the guys out there, but women can listen, too. You can
All right,
listen,
so I don't need to leave
this.
For now?
No, you can stay. Stay where you are. But I think that men will appreciate this more than women. I really do.
Great.
Yesterday, during the Cubs game, you had not one, but two very peculiar instances, both involving pain. In one of them, Anthony Rizzo hit a ball out to the outfielders, and Billy Hamilton was trying to catch the ball. Yeah, he hit it to left center field, and Billy Hamilton almost caught the ball with his face. The ball was between two outfielders, and it hit him in the head and just knocked him down.
Was it the sunshine glare?
I think he got, I think he lost it in the sun.
Oh,
I really
God.
Do. So it hits off his head, and then he's just sprawled out on the outfield grass, and then his fellow outfielder had to decide, do I go and get the ball and throw it in and try to prevent an inside-the-park home run, which ended up happening, or do I come to the aid of my teammate, who's in a lot of pain? He chose a little bit of both. He was very unsure of what exactly to do. And Anthony Rizzo, like I said, circled the bases, got an inside-the-park home run. But the reason I've asked you here today is this. Wilson Contreras is the catcher for the Cubs, one of eight catchers. The Cubs now carry eight catchers. And Wilson Contreras, in the ninth inning, there's a pitch that comes in and hits him in the worst possible place.
He caught a ball, too.
Yes. Ironically, that was the count when that pitch was thrown. I'm not making that up. It was. So he gets the ball in a place that you just do not want to get hit with a baseball in. And the way he handled it was a very novel thing. He got up and he did a dance all the way from...
Isn't that what you do when you get a ball?
You could. He did. That's exactly what he did. But he did this uncomfortable kind of, I'm going to try to walk it off, but boy, does this hurt. And he did it all the way down the third base line. But now this is the best part of this by far. They cut to the dugout where they show Joe Maddon and a coach and a bench player laughing like crazy. just
I thought
laughing.
That was mean because they're just, it's not funny, first
it's
of all.
It's not funny.
I don't have any, just in my purse.
Right.
So I don't that's know true. What it feels like, but that's typically what you see. As a woman, that's how you see a guy react when that happens. On the ground or just grabbing.
Writhing in pain.
Yes.
It is. It's only happened to me once. I got hit during a tennis match.
Oh, my God.
I got hit there. And the next 40 minutes were the most painful. You can't imagine. As painful as you could think, it's worse. It just hurts so bad. And then he looks over in the dugout and he sees his teammates laughing at him.
See, that's not right.
No.
But I bet that happens in baseball.
It's the boys playing baseball. That's what it should be, you know? Just having fun.
And I can't imagine, because as you're aware, you want to wear a cup, especially if you're catching.
Well, they do.
You want to wear a cup. So it hurt him that bad with a cup. So what if he didn't have a cup on?
Well, then he'd be an idiot.
Yes.
Why would he not wear a cup?
I don't know. There's a couple players who do not wear cups. There's a few players who have just said, it's not for me.
Not catchers, though.
I hope not catchers. I hope not.
I lost my train of thought here.
What time does the next train come to the station?
I don't think for the rest of the day.
Really? One train a day?
Yeah, I think that's all I get.
That's a bad depot.
But I just, it definitely, I can't think, this is what I was going to say, I can't think of a part of a woman, but I don't know because I've not, I mean, do you see stars?
You want to just...
And I don't mean like Keira Knightley no. and Madonna and stuff.
You want to die. You just go, I wish so badly I could be taken right now because there's nothing worse than this. The most painful thing in the world is kidney stones. I've had kidney stones. That's really painful. But this is a very close second. Very, very close. Always stones involved for some weird reason. I don't know why. All right, let's take a break.
Play ball.
We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then more fun. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Talking about my beach waves in my hair, which no one noticed yesterday. And I just want to thank my coworkers, because when I walked in today, mm-hmm. Bill and Kevin and shadowy Mike.
Yeah.
He's the shadowy intern.
Right.
You guys all said that you liked my beach waves.
Yeah, we did.
Because I yelled at you guys yesterday for
yeah,
no one noticing.
Very upset that we didn't notice. So
yeah,
today,
Wendy, you look just great
you
today.
You look terrific.
Beach waves.
You look like...
Need the curling iron.
You look great.
Thank you, Dave Plyer.
Dave Plyer came in just to tell you how nice you look. He didn't even have... He's got nothing going on here today. He just drove in to say that to you. This is the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. This news report is brought to you by Fog You Mold. Here's Steve Bertrand.
At Thanksgiving, gentlemen, it's important to remember that there are places... other places, of course, in this world that do not have the things that we have and take for granted. For example, Indianapolis. Huh? The Colts. Terrible team.
With a really bad coach.
Oh, yeah. Really makes you want to shed the tears.
The tears. You okay, Ted?
He's just having a heart attack.
I'm looking!
God, I miss Chris Farley.
All right, that's bogus because in Chicago we don't talk that way. Nobody really has that kind of voice.
I don't get it either, quite honestly.
I don't understand why people would characterize us as having that voice because we ain't got it.
We're about to find out a little bit more about the Chicago accent. My voice gets lower when I talk like that, and that's hard to do.
I wonder why.
We have Edward McClelland in the studio with us. We will call you Ted.
Yes.
And you have written numerous books, which we'll talk about, but you did this piece for the Chicago Reader that we wanted to talk to you about because the disappearing Chicago accent is layered with local history. Honest to God, I have grown up here my whole life, born and bred in Brookfield, Illinois.
Beautiful town there,
isn't
Brookfield.
It, though?
Beautiful
we
town.
We don't talk like this.
Nah.
I don't understand why the super fans talk like that, and that's supposed to be a Chicago accent. Not really a question, but we're going to talk about the Chicago accent today,
sure.
Correct?
Sure, and I just want to say I've been talking to some linguists, and what they tell me is the more correct term than disappearing is it's evolving. And it's becoming more exclusive, and people under 40 to the working class. there's three really distinct elements that make up the Chicago accent. One is the A sound. So if you're on the Southwest side and you say you're talking about going to St. Xavier University, say, I'm going to Zavs.
Yeah.
So okay. That's called a raised A. And then there's called the fronted O, and that is what makes our South Side team the Sox.
And as then, opposed to what? How do other people say the Sox? Because I do say Sox.
The Sox.
Just
I do it too. I say it too. I mean, I'm originally from Michigan, but it's the same dialect zone, and we do the same vowel sounds. And the other one is substituting D for TH. So you hear
D's, Dems, and Does.
D's, Dems, and Does guys. You know, that's always been kind of a term for sort of a salt of the earth Chicagoan from the South Side or an inner ring suburb. And that came because that originated because the TH is a pretty rare sound in the world's languages. So if you came from Poland or if you came from Italy, they didn't use that sound and they had a tough time with it. So they just start saying duh.
That makes
for
sense. Tuh,
and it got passed down through the generations. That's why it's Troop Street as opposed to Throop.
Wow.
You know how people say boat instead of both? They'll both be here around 6
Or they
6
say
o'clock.
One, two, three.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. See, now I'm half Italian, so I would hear my Italian uncles and grandparents
talking
say,
that
yeah.
way. But that's the one element that really is disappearing. People under 40 just have sort of discarded that. I mean, it's disappearing all
except
over the country.
Except for Violetta. Padromatic,
who does traffic
she says, you know, boat
directions.
Boat directions of the eyes.
So you're having some people, you're still, I mean, it's never going to be 100%, but
right.
basic, or 100%, as they say.
100.
About 100.
Not 100.
Right around 100.
Yeah. 100.
So but, when you say, because you had first said disappearing in your piece, but linguists have called you out on it, and they said, let's go with evolving over disappearing.
Sure.
Does that means essentially less and less people are falling prey to this.
Sure. I mean, now it's pretty much become all of these classic pronunciations, the middle class speakers are not using them as much. They're still used by the working class.
Yeah.
And what you call the classic Chicago accent, which was the superfans accent, that was really used by the World War II generation, the baby boom generation. You know, every generation, it's like music. Mm-hmm. Every generation has its own sound. Accents are like music. And that was really during the industrial heyday of Chicago. And so at that time, you know, if you graduated from high school in the 1960s, you didn't need to leave the neighborhood to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could go get a job in a steel mill, and then you didn't have to talk to anybody outside your shop or outside your church or your tavern or your home. And so there was really no need to use standard English. And also that this kind of language, you still hear it a lot, you know, with cops and firefighters and construction workers. It's kind of a macho way to talk. It gives you local cred.
It does, right? It says,
yeah, it does.
I'm a Chicagoan.
Exactly.
That's what that says.
Yeah, I mean, there's no wrong way to talk, but different sorts of accents present different messages. And so with people going to college or people who kind of want to make their way up in the professional world, they're sort of discarding that because it's considered blue-collar talk or, you know, white ethnic talk.
I guess it makes sense. And when you were saying, you know, you don't have to use, I don't remember the term you used, but like your best language.
Yeah.
You do notice, like, if you're meeting, like, an older person, you show respect, and I sound a lot more eloquent and
when
positive.
You're on the air.
Well, no, not on the air. That's pretty much myself. But like, if I would meet someone, such a pleasure to meet. You know,
sure.
I change my way of speaking a little bit.
And I heard from someone after I wrote the article. I heard from someone like that who'd grown up on the South Side and said, you know, her father was a salesman, and he would use proper English, but when he'd go home, he'd
that
talk
makes
like
sense.
That. But he'd tell the kids, you know, don't talk like that when you meet other people.
Make a good first impression.
Exactly.
A word I am noticing right now that people are saying that drives me crazy, and I hear a lot of news anchors do this on television and people who speak for a living, they put like the word street, if it's S-T-R-E-E-T, for some reason they put an H in there, like S-H. So street. It's strong.
I don't want to name names.
I'm not naming names, but I've heard a lot of people say, strong winds today. No, there
really?
Is no H in there. I'm very familiar with this that's happening. That is a new Chicago thing, I think.
Okay, all right. So that was another thing I was going to bring up is how you pronounce the name of the city. That's another generational difference.
That's completely split. Yes. And I think it's somewhere around 50-50 of people who say Chicago as opposed to Chicago, right?
Chicago, exactly. And that seems to be more of an old school pronunciation.
Some people, you know, Bill Curtis, Chicago.
Yeah, you know, and he came over here. He's not from here. He's from Kansas.
I believe he, yeah.
But I said
Chicago. But he knew of Chicago. Right.
And they do on what's the classical station, WFMT?
Yes.
Yeah, they really emphasize that for some reason.
I'm a combo platter of both. I'm Chicago. It's like kind of not Chicago, but not Chicago.
Right.
Chicago.
Mm-hmm. But Mayor Daley said Chicago.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah. Mayor Emanuel says Chicago. And so does Barack Obama. You remember, hello, Chicago?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Does it mean stinky onion?
Or
smelly onion?
It's an Algonquin word. And I don't even know. I wonder how they pronounced it. I think they pronounce it more like Chicago, so we're all doing it wrong.
Yeah,
so there's no right way to do it.
But this is the same place. Our state obviously is in Illinois with an I,
right.
And yet so many people call it Illinois.
You hear
with
that?
An E.
Yeah, I lived downstate for a couple of years. They drank milk.
Yeah.
And slept on a pillow.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the way.
And that's an entirely different accent. I mean, you know, Chicago is in a dialect region that stretches from Rochester, New York, to Milwaukee. And I was just in upstate New York driving back to Chicago. To me, that like Buffalo and Rochester sound more like Chicago than any other
city. They do, don't they?
Yeah. Because this was settled. Chicago was originally settled from upstate New York and western New England. They get on the boat in Buffalo and they get off in Chicago.
I know, you know, people who have accents and hear other people talk say, you know, we don't have an accent.
Oh,
I really feel that Chicagoans are free of accent.
Well, it's funny you say that.
I'm not kidding.
Take
a break.
Don't say it yet. Ted McClellan has some news for you, Wendy, that you may not want to hear. Coming up in just a little bit. You want to jump in? You can. Whether you're from Chicago or Chicago, we'll take your calls. We're at 312-981-7200. Spill and Wendy, WGN. Ted McClelland is here. Edward McClelland, if you want to be formal. Why not?
Sure.
He's talking about the Chicago accent and how it is evolving and changing, possibly even disappearing. Possibly. Now, I met you in the green room, Ted, and you gave some news that I get, but Wendy hasn't heard this yet. Please throw it Wendy's way.
Well, I hear a Chicago accent in you, but I don't hear a Chicago accent in Bill.
Oh, how about that?
How about that?
Well, where are you from, Bill?
Oak Forest,
okay.
Originally.
Well,
the southwest suburbs.
Okay.
Which is as blue-collar as Brookfield.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And more south side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I had elocution lessons for many years.
I
were electrocuted?
Yes, over and over and over again.
I mean, I always thought among broadcasters always seem to try to bleach out any sort of regional accent they have.
I sound very Chicago, huh?
To me, yeah. To me, you do.
Because to me, you sound like you have no accent at all.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. And Bill sounds the same way. But people from other regions will tell me I sound.
Club, Wendy.
People from other regions will tell me I sound like a Midwesterner. But to you, being from the Midwest, I probably don't sound like I
but
have.
But there is something to that. There is a Midwestern accent.
Do you think you're smarter than me because you don't sound Chicago? Because your glasses are cockeyed on your face again.
I'm a nutty professor.
Well, there are many Midwestern accents. People from Peoria speak in a completely different accent than people from Chicago.
My brother lives there, and some of the things they say, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but it's totally different.
Still downstate, you'll hear people say "warsh."
Sure.
Yeah, and that's a Midland accent. So that part of the country was settled from Pennsylvania, from Maryland.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes all the way back to a Scots-Irish accent.
It's funny how traceable most of it is.
Yeah, and in this part of the country, it's settled from upstate New York and New England, and it goes back to eastern England. You can trace this all the way back to the old country.
Here's a Chicago thing I've noticed, and again, it is generational. It, it still permeates a little bit, but not as much as it used to. When a Chicago person will tell a story, and
they go,
so I went in there and I says this, and then he says that, and then I says this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing that out, you would never say I says, and yet that was kind of common to say.
I think you'd write it out.
Would you say I says?
Or remember, Mike Royko had a book. It was called Says Who, Says Me.
Right.
Yeah, so
I remember.
I'm sure when he wrote about Slats Grobnik, he spelled it out S-E-Z.
Right. It became a word.
Yeah.
But instead of says, if you talk to like our generation or younger, he was like, I'm all happy about it, and she was like, so they don't even
and the
say
baby
says
boomer,
at all.
Yeah, the baby boomers are the greatest generation. They don't do that. Like I said, every generation has its own has its own lingo, has its own sound, you know, has its own slang.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have people who have some comments and questions. Kay's on the line. Kay, we are talking to Ted McClelland. What did you want to jump in with?
Hey, hi, you guys.
Okay.
First of all, I just want to say I'm a bit of a word nerd, so I am loving this conversation. and I'm from downstate, living in the Chicago suburbs with a husband who says milk and pillow. That drives me crazy. But, Wendy, I just wanted to chime in and let you know that I have also noticed the H being added on to S words. Where is that coming from?
I guess because, you know, people were like, I'm so street. And honest to God, people say it now for all the ST words. And if you do it for street, you're going to do it for strangle and things like that. I hate it.
I hate it, too. It drives me crazy. I think the first time I heard it, believe it or not, I was actually watching, like, Maury or something like that. And somebody was accused of being a stripper.
And I wow.
Myself, what the heck is a stripper?
All right. Well, thank you for being a word nerd, and thank you for chiming in, because this is an interesting conversation for me as well.
Well, can I just make one comment on what she said? She called us you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a Chicago thing, isn't it?
No, actually. Well, it's a northern thing, but there is another word that's used in Chicago. It means the same thing, and you can hear it in Beverly and Bridgeport, and that's yuz.
Y-A-Z or S?
Y-O-U-S-E.
Use.
I've never heard. We never use that. It's always guys.
No, but it's pretty rare. I mean, it's an old Irish thing.
Yeah.
Because there's no standard second person plural in English.
Are yous going to church on Sunday?
Exactly.
Or yous not going to church on Sunday?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I remember I was walking on Western Avenue. Some guy asked me, hey, are yous lost? You know, with a friend of mine.
That sounds Wisconsin to me.
Are you? They might do it up there. They do it in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, too, but it's dying out in favor of you guys. And I kind of prefer yous because you guys is kind of gendered, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But guys isn't like camaraderie, not...
Yeah.
Kay, thank you for calling. A great question. I want to make sure... I'm stuttering today. You got me all nervous because I sound like I'm from Chicago. I'm like all worried about it. Whatever. I grew up here. Julie...
You're on Chicago's very own. Don't worry about it.
Thank you. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I'm afraid to speak now.
I know.
Come on.
We were wondering if the bulk of Americans came from Europe in the 16 and 1700s and, you know, traveled all over, how did regional accents evolve, South, Boston, New York, Chicago?
Well, a lot of them evolved from later waves of immigration, as we were talking about with it, substituting the TH for D or yuz. Mm-hmm. That was an Irish thing. The Irish invented that because when they switched over from Gaelic to English, they needed a second person plural. So,
and the D's, Dems, and Does from the Italians.
Yeah, the Italians and all the people who didn't use TH in their native language. And one interesting thing about the difference that I learned in my research, the difference between the Boston accent, why they don't use the R sound.
Mm-hmm.
When people did come over here in the 16th and 17th century, they were using the R sound. But that went out of favor in England. Dropping your R's became more classy language, and then those people in Boston and in New York would trade with England, and England had all this prestige in, and so they sort of picked that up.
It's funny how they drop their R's, but here in the Midwest, we tend to drop our G's of all the letters.
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah.
Well, the governor. There you go.
All the time.
Oh, well.
Governor, always.
That's completely affected.
No kidding.
Well, that's to
thank
get votes.
You so much.
Sure. Julie, that's a great question. Thank you so much for calling. Here's something that we say in Chicago. At least I've done it. Marty?
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Excellent.
Good. One thing about the Irish, the hard T is big. That's an Irish thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, over here it's Thin Lizzy. Over there it's Tin Lizzy.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah.
That's
but
true.
I wanted to ask about a certain word that I've always had my family use, and that's you say the word jeet instead of saying did.
Oh, yeah.
We do it.
That's famous.
A Chicago thing, or
that's famous all over the Midwest. When I was in Minnesota doing some research, they were making fun of people on the Iron Range, which was an area in the northeastern Minnesota and settled by Finns, and they say, yeah, you know, if someone wants to know if you had dinner, you'd say jeet,
J-E-E-T, jeet,
or else another one is
going. Answer to that for did you is Jew.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or you'll go out to your garage to work on your engine.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Thank you so much, Marty. I was telling Ted McClelland off the air, my mom had a real a diversion to the word, or aversion to the word. You really make
so
me nervous.
So Chicago,
here.
Wendy.
Make me very nervous with my Chicago accent. Right. She would not let us say front room. That was just something, and we never really did the front room, but right. She didn't even want that used in our house. The front room she called the living room, and the family room she called the TV room. We could say, well, what about the front room? There is no front room in this house. There is no front room. Don't say that word. She really
had
an aversion to
that. Well,
it's
funny how many people referred to it as their front room.
Right.
Even when it was in the back of the house, they would still call it the front room.
Right.
Or front room.
Right. And I think, I don't know how often front room is heard. I think that may be more of a stereotypical
Chicago
pronunciation.
Thing. Yeah.
This is really fascinating. You can read Edward McClelland. He wrote this piece for the Chicago Reader. The Disappearing Chicago Accent is Layered with Local History. Very fascinating. And you have a couple of books as well, correct?
Yeah. Well, I wrote a book. And the last one was called... Nothing But Blue Skies, and that was a history of the Rust Belt. And I wrote a book called Young Mr. Obama, Chicago and the Making of a Black President, pretty much arguing that Obama would never become president if he hadn't come to Chicago.
Interesting. All right. And those books are available everywhere. You can get those any place on Amazon,
sure,
Barnes & Noble.
And your website?
EdwardMcClelland.com.
Pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Really nice to meet you.
It was fun talking to the
Bodeus. Thanks for telling me about your ma.
My ma, that was something too.
That's it. That's as deep as it goes.
She signed every birthday card mother. I'm like, I don't call you mother. She made her grandkids call her grandmother.
Oh, nice.
No, it's no one says that, ma.
How about that? Come on, ma. What are you talking about? Thanks, Ted.
Thank you.
A quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
You know who he is?
Well, he's Dean, Dean, Dean.
Dean, 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 Dean.
I have had my name legally changed to that now.
To Dean, 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 Dean?
Four Deans.
Dean.
Dean, Dean, Dean.
I'll tell you what, there's days where that's
not
even
enough.
It should
have only been three.
Well, five.
I've made a mistake.
No, that's all right. That's okay. Dean, you need to be commended for so many reasons, but mostly because your interview with Dick Van Dyke was just fantastic the other day.
Oh, thanks.
Wasn't that fun?
Thanks. That was...
You're lucky.
That I am. I am super lucky to be able to talk to guys like him. And when they turn out to be as nice as he was, as professional, as accommodating, as warm and hospitable, it makes it all the more entertaining. And just to see him goofing around. I mean, you know, he's a 12-year-old boy in a 90-year-old body.
Yep.
So you got along well.
Goofing, yes, of course we did.
Not that you're in a 90-year-old body.
How about how sharp he is? I mean, he's still singing. He's still dancing. He's still laughing. He's 90. And, boy, is that encouraging.
On and off the camera. We just couldn't have been nicer while we were setting things up. But when the Danville High School, there were a group of theater students, as he was sort of doing a little mini parade in a restored Chitty Chitty Bang Bang car, these kids were singing songs from Mary Poppins and, you know, from movies, Disney movies that he's been in. He stands up in this moving vehicle, 90 years old. He stands up in this moving vehicle, and he's singing and kind of dancing along with these kids, just having a great time.
Wow.
It was just absolute delight. I've got the full interview up on the web if anyone wants to hear it.
He looks great, too.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
And he looks great. I wasn't able to go to the appearances that he did on Sunday in Chicago at the Walt Disney Home on North Tripp Street, nor at the Tivoli Theater in Downers Grove, but I saw video of them, and it looks like he had a great time. He brought a singing quartet with him. He does, you know, songs with this quartet and keeps active and keeps busy, so it was a real treat, real treat.
In his book that he wrote a couple of years ago, his memoir, he talks about how he and his friends used to pal around. He had these three friends he was very close with, and there was another kid that was a couple years younger, 3 or 4 years younger, that wanted so badly to hang out with them, and they wouldn't let him, and that kid turned out to be Gene Hackman.
How about that? How about that? Who also grew up in Danville and also went to Danville High School. When you walk down the hallways of Danville High School, there are pictures of a young Dick Van Dyke everywhere, a young Gene Hackman everywhere. They've turned out some great people there, and that's why his foundation that he's started is so passionate to him. He's raising money and giving scholarships to kids in the arts because arts programs are being cut everywhere now. He he wants to make sure that kids in the arts are able to follow their dreams and not be victims to budget cuts. Imagine that in Illinois.
Right.
That something like that could happen, that a budget would get cut or a bill couldn't get paid.
No, that can't be.
Great that he's, that was the purpose of all of these appearances that he did, to raise money for his foundation for the restoration of his home in
Danville.
In Danville, which I drove by, the house that he grew up in. It's in shambles.
I mean,
it does need to be completely gutted and rehab. But I was out in front of the house. I pull up, and I'm right in front of the house thinking, little Dick Van Dyke and little Jerry Van Dyke.
Right.
Just running around the sidewalk playing ball.
Wreaking havoc in the neighborhood.
Falling over little ottomans.
Right, practicing. Dean, here's the funny thing. Years ago when I was doing stand-up, there's a big auditorium there in Danville that I worked in. All these people came who'd lived in Danville for years and years and years. And they all told me the same story, that when the Dick Van Dyke era happened, when he was a young boy there, the money that everybody put on which one of the Van Dykes would hit superstardom was Jerry.
Really?
They all said Jerry's the one that's going to make it to the top. Dick's okay.
How about that?
Yeah, but Jerry was the one.
Isn't that funny? He talked about his brother, Jerry Van Dyke, who was in a terrible car accident, apparently. He was in a head-on car accident. He's been in the hospital for a couple of months. Dick Van Dyke says that he's going to be okay. It's just going to take a long time for him to get back up and running again. I was shocked to hear that, but also glad to hear that he's doing a lot better. And
yeah.
I asked him if, what he could tell us about the condition of Mary Tyler Moore right now, who is also very, very ill right now, which he did confirm, saying that she is institutionalized. You know, she's been living with diabetes for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the ravages of diabetes are really taking its toll on her. And he said he hadn't talked to her in quite some time, but he knows that her condition is very, very, very poor right now.
She was one of the first celebrities. My dad had diabetes, and she was one of the first celebrities that I heard had it.
So sad. I hope she's okay.
Thing.
Yeah, she's been very public about the whole thing. But
yeah.
It's taken its toll. I mean, the last couple of appearances that I saw her on, specials, instead of walking out on the stage, she was already there.
Yeah.
You know, all the things that you see happen when celebrities get older, and it's awkward for them to walk independently. So I guess that's where we are with Mary Tyler Moore right now. Dick Van Dyke couldn't be any more opposite. The guy's dancing down the street.
At 90.
He's hippity-hoppity dancing down the street.
They should change the name of Danville to Dickville.
Excuse me?
Well, for Dick Van Dyke. There's no Dan.
I think there's a few other towns that are ahead of the curve on that, I think.
All right.
There's some movies that I've seen also.
All
right.
We won't talk
about
it.
Get this out of your system before I'm co-hosting with you tomorrow, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Dean's in tomorrow for half the show, right?
I'm doing half the show tomorrow, but if you're going to be working blue like this, I may have to reconsider.
Dean, you work blue enough yourself.
Yeah, that's
I don't
very
need
true.
To. God.
True.
Stay tomorrow's tuned show. For that.
So listen tomorrow when I sound like the clean one.
That'll be fun. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then Dean will tell us what movies are coming out this weekend. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're talking to Dean Richards right now.
We are. We can't hide that from you. Dean Richards is on the phone. We're talking about movies. Dean, a couple of big films opening this weekend. Let's start out with The Legend of Tarzan. What are your thoughts?
I may wind up being one of the few critics in America that like this movie. It's getting raked over the coals nationally. And I think unjustifiably so. I enjoy it. I've always been a fan of the Tarzan franchise. I go back to the days, I think it was WGN TV that used to run the old Tarzan movies.
The Weissmuller version?
The Weissmuller movies from the 30s. He was Tarzan longer than any other actor. The 30s and 40s, and those were the movies that got replayed on television all of the time.
How about Elmo Lincoln? Did you like him?
Elmo Lincoln was the very first Tarzan.
Mm-hmm.
Tickle me, Elmo Lincoln.
Tickle me, Elmo Lincoln. He was put away for a couple of years for that, wasn't he?
Who knew that Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch also happened to live in the forest?
Right.
Oscar was the original cheetah.
In the jungle. Who knew that? I didn't know till I was like doing some research this week that Tarzan is the longest-running character in the history of motion pictures, longer than any other character.
More than Sherlock Holmes.
The first Tarzan movie came in 1918.
Wow.
And has been running. There have been 50 Tarzan movies made over the years.
And I've seen one of them.
That's it?
Yeah.
Which one?
The original.
The Elmo Lincoln?
No, I guess Weissmuller.
Johnny Weissmuller? Yeah.
Because if it's actually on YouTube. If you look up Elmo Lincoln or if you look up first Tarzan movie, it's a silent movie.
Yeah.
And Tarzan looks like...
What? Like what?
How do I describe...
He's not in great shape.
He's really not.
No.
He's... Well, imagine me in a loincloth.
I have.
Let's put it there.
I'm doing it now.
That's what it looks like. He's not... Doesn't look like a guy who should be running around in a loincloth. But he does. And it's kind of funny to watch it. It was Johnny Weissmuller that really, is the image and the model of... Tarzan that we know now. He's a 9-time Olympic swimming champion.
Yeah.
A Chicagoan. He went to Lane Tech High School, as a matter of fact. But the guy who plays it in this new movie, The Legend of Tarzan, is Alexander Sarsgaard, an actor you probably know best from True Blood. Jane is played by Margot Robbie in the movie.
Mm.
But this whole, I mean, the whole concept of the way they present this, I thought was really interesting. It didn't start off with, you know, Tarzan as a boy in the jungle being raised by gorillas. The movie starts off in 1800 era England. Tarzan...
Before Brexit?
Before. It's when they were still in the European
Union.
Oh,
they were? Okay.
Yeah, they were still in the European Union then. John Clayton, who was Tarzan, is a sophisticated Englishman now. And he's asked to go back to the jungle to try to resolve some differences that are going on between some of the tribes. And because he has this history of, you know, growing up in the jungle,
mm-hmm.
being raised by a gorilla, that he's the perfect person to try to help resolve some of these differences. Turns out that there are lots of little subplots to go along of why all of this is taking place. But while he's returning back to the jungle, there are some flashbacks explaining who he was and... you know, what had happened. So I think the way that this is presented is really interesting. The bad guy in the story is one of the great bad guys that we have on screen these days, Christoph Waltz, Oscar winner Christoph Waltz.
Love him.
He's fantastic. Samuel L. Jackson plays a terrific role as an American ex-slave who is now helping... to try to facilitate this trip in taking place. He's sort of the comic relief in the movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was perfectly exciting. The action scenes with the animals and the stampedes, all perfectly exciting. There's a good amount of good versus evil in this. I don't understand why everybody is so... displeased with this whole thing.
That's crazy.
I wound up enjoying it. I wound up giving it a Dean's List B minus.
That's not bad at all. Yeah. That's not bad at all. Okay, that's the Legend of Tarzan.
I did apologize to the people because I did wear a loincloth.
Well, sure. Why wouldn't you?
When I went to see this, and a couple of people actually said, Elmo Lincoln, you look fantastic.
You know, come on, think about, you know, the original Tarzan. There weren't weight machines.
Right.
There wasn't the...
LA Fitness.
Yeah.
They didn't
have that. He was probably not eating great food.
Tarzan, where are you going? Me go to Planet Fitness.
Right. That's a scene that got deleted from
Having
the movie.
$19.95 per month special must go. Come, cheetah. There's no cheetah in this new
no
movie.
No cheetah?
There's no cheetah and there's no boy in this film. I was a little disappointed in that. But Margot Robbie as Jane is really great in the movie. Alexander Skarsgård does. I think he does a very nice job.
He's a good actor. The BFG was a book that I read to my daughter several times when they were young. They loved it. I loved it even more. Does that translate well on screen?
I think it does. I have to say, this was a classic case of a kid who is sitting next to me in this movie, making about as much noise as possible candy wrappers.
Did you slap him?
Sipping the last sips of Coke in the cup. Right, that noise.
Yeah.
And then when he finished all that, the sound of his straw going up and down through the little hole in the lid.
Oh, no.
Up and down. So I gave him a couple of Killer Uncle Dean stares. to stop, yeah. Just like staring at him, like, are you kidding me, kind of stares.
Yeah.
And he stopped for about 5 minutes, and then he started again. So then I moved away to sit somewhere else, but I could still hear him. And then I heard somebody else, oddly, not his parents, somebody else telling him to, why don't you shut up and stop making all the noise. So I wasn't the meanest person in the world. But it did significantly distract me, I have to say, during this movie. And I think took a lot of my the pleasure that, because I'm a Roald Dahl fan as well. I'm a fan of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Friendly Giant, is that what it stands for?
If that's what you want the F to stand for, it can.
It is.
I never read this book,
Red
so
Fox,
I don't know.
It's much great. That's what you want to be.
Clean it up here,
yes,
Dean.
Big Friendly Giant.
Big Friendly Giant.
Big Friendly Giant is what it's about. It's about a story about a young orphan girl who is snatched out of the orphanage by a giant who trolls the streets of London at night, takes her to his home,
his lair?
Where he lives, in the land where the other giants live. And the other giants bully this giant. So this young orphan girl, who has always been sort of an outcast, can really relate to this other giant, and they become really fast friends. And she hates that he's being bullied this whole time. So they devise a plan to bring the Queen of England into the story to help resolve this problem. It's beautifully made. Steven Spielberg directs it. It's beautifully made. There are times when I'm not listening to candy wrappers opening and some kid sipping the last microscopic drop of Coke out of his cup, of whimsy in this movie, but it's also kind of like old school. You know what I mean? It's a little bit dark. There are times where it's a little bit scary.
Roald Dahl always has that element.
Yeah, there is that. And part of me loves this.
Yeah,
because it's like an old fashioned classic fairy tale. Where it's a little bit politically incorrect. I mean, a kid's getting snatched out of her own bed at night by a grown man is, you know, on one level a little eerie. But these classical fairy tales, you know that it's going to work out. Here, where I was really disappointed was that, you know, from Steven Spielberg, we often get like a real heart in his movie, a really touching moment. And I admit I was completely distracted while I was watching this movie. I really should watch it again, but I didn't feel like that was there with this movie. So I wound up being satisfied, slightly disappointed. It reminded me more of Martin Scorsese's Hugo than what some people are saying, you know, this is his next E.T.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anywhere close to being his E.T., of having the warmth and wit and the humor and the heart that we've gotten from Steven Spielberg in the past. I think it's just, I just think it's okay.
Dean's list on this?
C plus.
Yep. Just okay. Dean, we're all out of time, but The Legend of Tarzan, you got good, really good marks for, and then BFG, mostly good, but with some reservations.
Right. And keep your kids quiet, please. You're coming.
Please.
If you're out, I don't know if some of you people know, you're not in your living room in some places.
Right. Dean's filling in for me tomorrow for half of the show, and Wendy's already booked that kid from the movie theater to sit in as a guest, so you'll have a good time.
I'm wearing a baseball cap.
That'll be fun.
Like you do tomorrow in shorts.
And a loincloth, I hope.
Please.
And loincloth. You know it, baby.
All right.
Thanks, Dean. We're talking to the guy who plays SpongeBob tomorrow, right?
Yes, and then I'm going to see SpongeBob tomorrow night. I know you've seen it, so we're going to do someone who's seen it, someone who's looking forward to seeing it.
Super excited.
That'll be great.
Thank you, Dean. He's great. See you guys.
Have a good weekend. We'll find out what Steve has next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Ryan Burrow. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Wendy. That's a nice surprise. What are you doing here? I'm shocked. Wow.
I thought I'd come back.
Oh, you snuck right up on me there.
Although every day when we split at noon, I always say, okay, guys, have a great rest of the show.
Yes.
I'll see you tomorrow.
You pretend as though you're leaving. And it should elicit panic from Kevin and myself, and yet we just have come to accept it.
No, Kevin has this thing that he does to me all the time. Would you,
Wendy?
I am so sick of hearing the shameful Wendy.
Well, you embarrass him sometimes.
Well, I've determined that I'm the mom of the show.
How does it feel? It sucks, kind of, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm used to it. It's
How
a lot.
Are you the mom of the show?
Well, I you know, I keep you guys on track. I have to stay on top of you. I get ignored sometimes.
He does lick my face before
I've noticed
newscast,
if there's a mark.
Yeah. Now he licks his finger,
right,
then
and then
rubs
licks
that
your
on
face.
Your.
He really? That's what
no,
he does
he
for you guys?
Lick your, you lick your kid's face?
No, I'm saying he licks my face.
I lick
no,
Ryan's face.
No, you lick your finger and then get the smudge off their
got
cheek.
A little something right there, Ryan.
Yeah, but you don't lick their face. You lick your finger first. God, what do you do with your kids? That's
their
weird.
Faces are clean. I've seen Ryan's kids. Their faces are spotless. Whatever you're doing great.
Thank you.
When Steve Bertrand does the Wintrust business lunch, he always sabotages the studio. Is that not correct, Kevin?
It's very correct. And so I have to tell you, am I potted up? Is this potted up? Are we ready? Yada,
every
yada, yada.
Day.
You adjust some of the levels, the buttons, the
yes.
knobs. Yeah.
And I every day you ask me at the start of the show when we take it over from Cochran, which usually it's ready to roll. Mm-hmm. But Bertrand like usually has your mic off just to spite us.
Right. Right.
I'm the one who doesn't need my mic on because I'm loud enough. You could probably hear right. me through Bill's microphone. But so every second half, Kevin goes, is the button, you know, am I potted up? Is the button ready? And it's like, now you know what it's like to be a mom.
Right.
To have to worry about everyone else.
He also told me, Kevin, that he would appreciate it if you and I would come in a little earlier, like a mom. He said, you guys stay out too late.
Or,
I worry
know,
about
me
you.
Every once in a while, I worry about you.
What
yeah.
time? What time should I start worrying, he'll say.
I have a lot of off-air texting going on with you. Bill doesn't answer. We know he doesn't use his cell phone too much.
I don't
much.
Have... it's not personal. I just don't have it with me most
I know,
of the
we
time.
Know that.
I like to be off the grid, as we say, in the spy game.
And, you know, really, we're on a need-to-know basis for most things.
Right. That's very, very
you
true.
You can wait till we come in.
I'm excited about a couple of guests that we have coming up on the second half of the show. First, a guy from The Onion, Scott Dickers, writes for The Onion, which is hands down... one of the funniest publications of all time, The Onion. He's put together a book called Trump's America, and I'm anxious to talk to him about
the
that.
The Complete Loser's Guide.
The Complete Loser's Guide, Trump's America, yeah.
You have to finish it out saying that. And you are not duped by The Onion ever. I mean, you know that that's a parody site.
Right.
But there have been other places that you have gotten information and you were astounded to find out that they were not unlike The Onion in the way that it's false news.
I've been fooled by sites with names like thisisfakenews.com. Yeah, you would think just by the name, by virtue of the name, I'd go, well, this is probably not real. But no, I've fallen for some of their antics. The Onion has not fooled me yet because
no.
I'm a big fan. But we'll talk to Scott Dickers about Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. And also Tavis Smiley will be on the show today.
Tavis Smiley is a name that I've heard bandied about forever. He's had a PBS show and he also hosts the Tavis Smiley Show,
mm-hmm.
Public Radio International, PRI. I don't know where it is. I just know that I've seen him around forever.
Yeah, he's a very smart man.
And he has written a book, Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. I will...
Go on, say it. You have to say it out loud.
I don't want to say it now.
You should hint at it. You're one of two people on the planet who believe something. Come on. You can do this. The first step of recovery
Michael
is
Jackson
acknowledgement.
Was forced... I don't need the recovery.
The rest of the planet does.
Well, I just believe that Michael Jackson was robbed of his childhood.
I agree with you.
His dad was a tyrant.
I agree with you there.
I believe he wasn't shown a lot of love and cuddling.
Agreed.
And sometimes I frequently think that he was accused of some things that he may not have done.
Disagree.
And that's okay. 'Cause,
you
know,
think he was innocent, that Michael Jackson was innocent?
I do.
Oh, no.
I do.
Why
I just,
would you think that?
Because just the way these things played out, like a child would spend the night at Michael Jackson's house and then the mom was crying foul. Why did the mom let the kids stay at Michael Jackson's house? That's my first question.
You don't think it's a little weird that all these parents have accepted out-of-court settlements from Michael Jackson for whatever happened? I mean, money, a lot of money changed hands.
I don't,
you don't
know
think
how
that's
much
a little
money.
Suspect?
I don't know how much money changed hands, and I, you know, I am under the belief that if I was accused of something I didn't do, I would say it loud, say it proud, and take it till the end of the court days
right.
to just prove that I was innocent. But then you start thinking with Michael Jackson's celebrity status, he wanted to make it go away.
Right.
I don't know, Bill. I you don't know for a fact.
But if you
I don't
were accused of something, wouldn't you? You'd fight for your
innocence.
That's
what I just said. Yeah, I would take
but
it to the end.
He didn't fight for his innocence. They paid people off.
I don't know the whole truth because I wasn't involved. I just know that I don't believe.
What about the Jesus juice?
Yeah, that was suspect. I'll admit that.
I think it was. Because even Jesus is like, don't get me. I don't want my name on this.
I don't know, but we'll talk about this before you judge me. And there's a quote to open the book from Tavis Smiley, which was co-written by David Ritz, who's a national best-selling author. A quote from Michael Jackson at the beginning of the book, "Before you judge me, try hard to love me."
All right. I will.
So
but
I don't know.
I will find you guilty.
Well, yeah, I don't know. He just had a very weird life.
He made it known that he would have these sleepovers with kids, and they would just kind of lay together and laugh the night away.
And cuddle. But here's me. I'm thinking.
You don't think that's.
Well,
it was the interview with Martin Bashir, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Was that
yes.
It was
yeah.
2020 or.
Nightline.
Yes.
Or
Nightline,
was it 20
yeah.
or 20 or Nightline? I don't remember which.
It
was 2020 because Nightline came later.
It was a very awkward interview.
It was. And Martin Bashir did a great job.
Yeah, he did.
He really pressed him.
Yeah.
But it's just like. We brought up yesterday that Lisa Marie Presley, I forgot, was married to Michael Jackson. And I said, do you think they consummated their relationship? And you said no.
I don't think they did.
But I think there are things that there are people that are just asexual.
Oh, there's no question about that.
And that's what I'm feeling.
He's one of them. But aside from his asexuality, the fact that he had these weird as a grown man having sleepovers, like if I tried to run that past my wife, I just got a couple of neighborhood kids that are just coming over for a sleepover. I don't know if that would fly.
I don't think he saw himself as a grown man. I really don't. I think he thought of himself as still a little Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
But, you know, I who knows? Honestly, who really knows the truth?
That's true. So, again, that book is called Before You Judge Me. We'll talk to Tavis Smiley, the author, co-author of that book. That's coming up later on. So there's a lot of good stuff coming your way. Stick around. Oh,
and we have a pair of tickets to see Rick Springfield with special guests Lover Boy and the Romantics.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of my era.
Mm-hmm.
July 3rd, it's part of the Grand Victoria Casino and Elgin Summer Concert Series. And we have one of your fun games to play. It's a Friday fun day.
It's going
to
be good. Well, it's a Thursday fun day.
Well, you're not here tomorrow,
oh,
I
so
guess.
Today, yeah, by proxy, it's a Friday fun day.
Damn it, I thought it was Friday.
So... So all that and more, if you can imagine, it's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Hey, Cubs fans.
Crazy.
He is crazy. You're Bill with a K, aren't you?
With a K.
Hey, Cubs fans with a K. Head to Jewel Asco every Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Cubs Fathead stickers free inside the Chicago Tribune now through August 14th.
Is it possible Crazy Kaplan isn't crazy, just a poor speller?
That could be it.
Go to Poor Spelling Kaplan's. 7 convenient locations with a J.
You mentioned your anniversary.
Today's my 25th. Not just mine, but my wife's as well. Our anniversary is today, 25 years.
That's really awesome. I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you.
I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Why didn't you go on some like big cool trip or something for
your
25th?
When the show is over, we're leaving. As soon as the show's over. I don't want to miss the show.
Tahiti?
Michigan.
Tahiti, Michigan.
Yes. It's not as exotic as Tahiti, but it's closer.
Do the girls get you guys an anniversary gift? Has that been the norm lately?
They haven't.
Because that's weird, I think, for a kid to get. I don't know. Do you get your parents an anniversary gift?
Just be
good for the day?
I'm trying to remember if we did with my parents. I don't think we did. Is that customary?
No,
I don't expect one.
I was just asking because it is like a big one. This is the
25th. If you're going to give a gift, right? 25th
this
is the one.
This is silver.
Yeah, it's silver.
Maybe you'll get a Sacagawea, a silver dollar.
That'd be cool. That'd be excellent.
Getting two different texts asking if fireworks are illegal in Illinois. Yes.
Yes.
That's why you go to Crazy Kaplan's in Indiana.
It's illegal to buy or sell them in Illinois, but you can cross state lines with them.
Can you really? Because
can't you?
I don't think so.
You can't?
I don't. I mean, people do, but I think you, if you're blowing them off in the backyard, I think you can get them confiscated. I don't think you're going to be arrested.
This is a time, by the way, I did this story last year. I mean, this is a time when Hammond and Lance, I should say Hammond and Whiting and all of those kind of border
cities.
Oh my gosh, you can't find a firework there. I mean, they sell out. So what happens
Crazy Kaplan said, shop early, man.
What happens is they get their stock and then they sell it out. And a lot of these places will close July 5th, you know, and whatever they don't sell, they have their own little private fireworks display, but people are dropping tens of thousands of dollars for this stuff.
Crazy.
Well, a lot of them are doing, corporate events and things like that. But, and I don't know if you mentioned, I listened to some of that interview, but because one of the cool things they have now on these fireworks is the QR codes.
What's that mean?
So what you do is you go up with your cell phone, you scan it, and a YouTube video pops up of what that firework does.
Oh, wow. That's
so you can
impressive.
See how it's supposed to sound and look before you buy, because some of these, especially some of these, the bigger displays they have. I mean, these things cost hundreds of dollars.
I have never been one to like fireworks. Snakes.
To like seeing them using them or what?
For personal use.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love seeing them. I mean, if you don't like seeing fireworks,
you gotta love it.
You're crazy with a K.
Or a dog.
Or a dog. Right. Yeah, dogs also not big fans.
Tiki gets a little weirded out about the noise.
Does she get he or she?
He.
He gets some medicine that night?
No, he doesn't get that bad.
Steve Dale does a service now for $4. He'll come to your house and he'll sit with your dog and comfort your dog during any fireworks display.
That is way too cheap.
For $4?
I'd give him $400 to go spend the weekend with Tiki.
That's about right.
$400 just to have Steve Dale. Yeah. Could he clean too and cook something?
I think he would do that.
I am not one for personal fireworks, really. I like to see them out, but it's kind of, whether or not your parents do it. 'Cause my father-in-law, Jim Mack Sr., will, for years, they would always do their own backyard, fireworks display, always. Mm-hmm. And then the cops would, show up. And he would do that fake running thing that people do, like he was running into the house. Where you're not moving any faster at all, but it's
just
the fake
give the motion.
Run. Yeah, like, oh, got a hot tail under the house right now.
Sure.
And they never got in trouble. A lot of times it was just like, okay, it's late enough, stop it.
Right.
And then an hour later they'd do it. So now we have a little fireworks action going on because Jimmy Mack follows
down.
In his father's footsteps.
Yeah.
But we always have the hose there because I think the biggest dangers of fireworks when you're in your own backyard is duds.
The ones that are supposed to go off and then for whatever reason they do not.
Because then you walk up to see what's going on
and that's when
they
snaps. Go. Yeah.
So give it some time.
That's solid advice with almost anything, Wendy. Just give it give it a little bit of time. Not just fireworks, but everything.
Don't whip the hose out on it. Just give it some time.
Right.
And don't approach it until you know for a fact it's out. And you might want to be able to salvage it. If not, just put the hose on it.
That's it.
And call it a day.
That's
call it a day, call it a dud.
Right.
With a K.
You should speak at schools. And I say that because most schools are out for the summer. You should just
That's
be
what I love
in
about
an auditorium
you.
By
You're
yourself.
You're so supportive with my freelancing business. I really appreciate it.
That's all right.
Happy anniversary,
Bill.
Well,
thank you. That's nice. All right, a quick break, then some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Come on, tell me this is not one of the most entertaining entertainers of all time.
Without a doubt. No question about it.
All right, there's a new book out. It's called Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. And on the line with us right now is a guy I've seen on TV numerous times on the Tavis Smiley Show. His name is, oddly enough, Tavis Smiley. Hi, Tavis.
Hey, Wendy. How are you? Hey, Bill. How are you?
Nice to meet you finally, Tavis. We're both big fans.
Thank you.
First of all, our condolences to a couple of people you were close personal friends with, Prince and Muhammad Ali. So sorry about that.
Thank you. You
were also pretty tight with Maya Angelou. Yeah. What's wrong with these friends that you're having? This is worrisome to me, Tavis.
You know, I grew up down the road from Chicago. Chicago, as I've said many times, is my favorite American city. And I'm not saying that because I'm a WGN. I've said it a thousand times because I grew up down the road in Indiana, and I could never have imagined as a child growing up in Indiana that I'd have this great fortune. There's a great line in a movie called Broadcast News that stars that wonderful actor William Hurt, and his character asks in the film, what do you do when your life exceeds your dreams? And I have been fortunate in so many ways that my life has exceeded my dreams, and what an honor it is to have met some of these people and be able to call some of them friends.
That's awesome. Now, have you ever met Michael Jackson? Have you interviewed him?
I met Michael a couple of times, never interviewed him. I've said many times it'd be cosmically unfair, I guess, to have been friends with both Prince and Michael. Nobody could have it that good, but at least I spent 20 years with Prince. Met Michael a few times, but grew up, again, in his home state of Indiana as a Michael Jackson fan. His music is the soundtrack of my life, and when he died, I was gobsmacked because I had my tickets, plane tickets, concert tickets, hotel reservations to go to London. I wanted to see this last show if, in fact, Wendy and Bill, this was going to be it. As they said, this is it.
And that went out on DVD because I know we purchased it. I was a huge fan of Michael Jackson's, and June 25th, 2009 is when we lost him. And I'm still pinching myself sometimes because I forget that he's gone.
Yeah, it's hard to accept. It's been 7 years as of last Saturday, I think, 7 years since he's been gone from us. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in certain individuals' iconography. When these icons get to that level, we get so caught up in their iconography that we lose sight of their humanity. And to be sure, because Michael was human, he made any number of mistakes. There were any number of self-inflicted wounds, and people are entitled to their opinions about him as an iconic star. But there is no doubt about his artistic genius, and I hope that this book, which focuses just on the last 16 weeks of his life, from the moment he makes the announcement, I'm coming back one more time, this is it. He's dead 16 weeks later at the age of 50, and I wanted to know as a fan, what happened? When you're trying so hard to get back on that stage, what happened inside of that 16-week period that put you on the brink of and ultimately caused you to take your last breath, and you didn't get back to doing what you were so desperately trying to do? That human drama, that story fascinated me. I started out very quickly with one simple question. Why are you gone so soon? When I got into the research, my question, Bill, did a 180 on me. It wasn't why are you gone so soon, but when I saw all the madness going on in his world, my question became, how did you live this long?
He had I was saying before we got you on, I'm one of the few people in this world who does not believe he had any sexual interaction with these kids. He was a child star. His father was a tyrant. I feel that Michael Jackson never had the opportunity to grow up, and this whole cuddling thing was just, he didn't get that growing up and wanted to give it to someone else. Those are my feelings and my feelings alone.
And you're entitled to that, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. The reason why we called this book Before You Judge Me, as you know, he had a song called Childhood, not one of his biggest hits, but a song he wrote called Childhood. There's a line in the song that says, before you judge me, try hard to love me. Before you judge me, try hard to love me. It seems to me that's a mantra we should all live our lives by, trying to love folk before we judge them. And so Michael did not, in fact, have a childhood, and there's a eerie scene in this book in the last 16 weeks where Conrad Murray, the doctor, of course, who was tried and convicted for wrongful death, Conrad Murray, for some reason, recorded this conversation, but Michael is under the propofol, but he's coming out from under it, so he's only half conscious, but he's talking about two things on this tape that was played at the trial. One, how he regrets what happened to him as a child. He's still, at 50 years of age, wrestling with having lost a childhood, the abuse of that childhood. He's only half cognizant of what he's saying, but it's so deep in his spirit and in his DNA, it comes out in that call. And the second thing he's talking about is how he has to get back on stage. So even when this guy isn't lucid, the drama of what happened to him as a child is still so deep in him that it comes out of his mouth, but he doesn't even know what he's saying.
Tavis, was Michael Jackson only happy when he was on stage?
I wouldn't say he was only happy, then he was certainly happy all the time around his children. And what I think most people don't know is that the main reason for wanting to do these shows one last time at the age of 50 is because his kids had never seen him perform live. It wasn't just because he needed money. It wasn't just because of the greed that the promoters had to do more and more and more shows. All that factors in. But his primary reason was that before he got too old, he wanted his kids to see him do live what they had never seen him do. And so that's why he was fighting so hard to battle this tension between his drug dependency on the one hand and this dogged desire to get back on stage for his kids and his fans one last time.
And you hear of drug dependency, and not unlike Prince, when we heard, you know, being local here, he was coming home. The plane had to make a diversion to Moline. Yeah. We're thinking something's got to be wrong. You just don't land a plane because you have the flu. And that was right. What was originally reported. And then when opiates came up, and even with Michael Jackson, you hear drugs and it's like, oh, poor thing. Shame on them for doing drugs. But these were prescribed drugs.
They were prescribed drugs. They were never recreational users. They both lived clean lives with regard to how they took care of their specimens, their vessels, their bodies. And it's just so ironic. Both born the same year, both dead in their 50s, both drug dependency, not recreational use, born initially of pain. And they were trying to anesthetize the pain so they could continue doing what they did best, which is to love and serve people. And so there's so many parallels here. I spent one night with Prince, and we spent many nights together hanging around and talking around the world. But he was in the studio when word came that Michael had passed. He canceled rehearsal, sent his band home. He was practicing to go to headline the Montreux Jazz Festival. When he sent his band home after hearing Michael had died, he locked himself in his bedroom for days, Wendy. He wouldn't come out. When he finally came out, he called me and invited me to go to Montreux with him. I went to Montreux. He slayed the show that night, and from 2 o'clock in the morning until the sun came up, I sat and listened to Prince talk about his love and his respect for Michael's artistic genius. What a moment to spend hours listening to Prince talk about his respect for Michael's talent, and now they're both, again, sadly, gone too soon.
Way too soon, way too soon. Tavis Smiley's our guest, along with David Ritz. They have written a book called Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. Tavis, since you brought up Michael Jackson's kids, here's a question that's been floated out there for years and years and years. Are they truly his children?
You know, I don't know. There's so many things that I don't know. I don't know what the story is on that. I know that these kids love Michael. I know that they're in a lot of pain. I know that his daughter, Paris, particularly, is on the top of my prayer list, Bill. When you see the way her pain is playing out in these social media spaces and the way that she's trying to express herself and defend herself and being trolled on Twitter, social media is no place for these kids, and I wish I could just get to her. To say, get off of social media and get her the help that she needs. Her grandmother, Miss Catherine, is doing the best she can, but you got to feel for this girl. It's not easy for any child to go through adolescence, but I just get pain when I see what she's going through in this social media space.
She just turned 18. I saw a picture on Instagram where she was sporting her new tattoos, and in Paris Jackson's feelings, she had a terrible time, and now these tattoos and works of art on her represent courage and the ability to go on and don't give up, everyone. And I thought, I read that and I thought, that's great. I looked at the picture, but really, she's 18 years old, and this is giving her a spotlight that I wish she didn't have either.
I totally agree, Wendy. Couldn't agree more.
Why do you think, without a doubt, Tavis, we've heard the story so many times from child actors and child musicians and child stars, how difficult it is to transition to a normal life. But I think Michael Jackson was unparalleled in how isolated he was. Why did he have a harder time than anybody else at this?
Because your question is a brilliant question, Bill, because he was more gifted than anybody else, because more people pulled at him than anybody else, because more people got their claws into him than anybody else. Barry Gordy told me in one of our conversations, we've talked about Michael so many times over the years, and Barry's a friend, and Quincy's a friend, we've talked about this, and they both agree that at one point in Michael's life, as an adult, he became rudderless. And when you become rudderless, that's Barry Gordy's word, rudderless. When you become rudderless and you're not anchored, you become unmoored, you start to drift. But that's a lot to deal with when you've got all the pressure that Michael was under from being a child. I can tell you this, the research for this book and really understanding how Michael just suffered all those years because of his childhood or lack thereof or the abuse in that childhood. For the first time in my life, Bill and Wendy, I'm really starting to rethink personally what I think of the way we treat child stars and whether or not, if you are gifted at a young age, whether or not you ought to spend your time just studying and learning and practicing. And when you get to an age where you're old enough to handle it, then you get a chance to exercise your gift. I just think I'm just really starting to rethink this whole notion of what I think of child stars.
Well, and he was such a young baby when he started performing with the Jackson
Sure.
5. And, I mean, what is the age limit? Is it 18?
Exactly.
I mean,
it's a tough question. I don't have the answer. I just know that when I look at the way he was scarred, and at 50 years of age, he's still wrestling with these very, very serious questions. It's just got me rethinking the process of the kinds of young people that I'm excited about and excited for, but whether or not we're putting too much on them, and whether or not, in fact, whatever you think of Michael Jackson, there's a legitimate question to be asked, Wendy and Bill, which is, what role did we play? What role did we, the public, what role did we, his fans, play in helping to create whoever he became?
That's a good question. Can't wait to read this book. We just got it in. Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. This covers what the 16 weeks prior to his death and what transpired. What about LaToya and Janet? Did they have any part in this? Did Michael mention them? Or were they still talking?
Yeah, he, in the last 16 weeks, didn't see his family a lot because he was rehearsing so aggressively for the tour. Did talk to his mother, of course, regularly. That's the love of his life. And his father was, as always, pressuring him. His dad wanted him to cancel these concerts in London and instead do a reunion tour with his brothers, which he thought, one, would make more money for Michael. Number two, wouldn't have Michael working so hard. So here, even until the end, his father is still in his face, still pressuring him, still trying to control a certain part of his legacy. And that story over the last 16 weeks is tension-filled, and you'll find that in the book as well.
Tavis, was there jealousy? You know, he was kind of front and center for the Jackson 5. Was that hard on the other brothers, or did they just accept it?
I think it's hard on anyone when you're a family unit and one person breaks out and has the kind of wild success. On the one hand, you have to be happy for him. He is your brother. You love him, and you're happy to see him succeed. On the other hand, when you end up in the shadows, I think part of the human condition is that everybody wants to be loved, respected, appreciated, and acknowledged. That's just part of the human condition. And when you lose out on that acknowledgement piece of it, that's got to work on you in some way. I don't know if it rises to the level of jealousy, but you'd never convince me that that's not something they think about, certainly.
And, you know, with Joe Jackson, as you said, towards the end, putting the pressure on Michael to get back with the brothers and do a tour, there's something in all of us that we do try to please people, but you always try to please your parents. So imagine what Michael was feeling like, being probably angered at what his dad is thinking, but it's like still wanting to please him. It's a tough position to be in.
And the only reason why he met with his father, his story in the book, his father came to his house two or three times, ringing the doorbell, begging to be let in to talk to Michael. Michael at first didn't want to be bothered with it because he was non-confrontational. He only agreed to see his father finally and let him come in the house to make his pitch because his mother asked him to do so. Michael, again, to the end, trying to please his mother.
Can't wait to read this.
Tavis, one more really quick question. We were talking about Lisa Marie Presley yesterday because she's getting another divorce. She's been married four times. One of those marriages was to Michael Jackson. What was behind that marriage, do you think, exactly?
I don't know. I think Michael certainly had a fascination with the success of Elvis. Michael was fascinated with anyone in the arts community who'd had the kind of wild success that he wanted to emulate. And so I don't know. I can't get inside his head in that regard, and it's not covered in our text. But I think that that had something to do with the fact that he and Lisa were hanging out in the first place, was that Michael was so fascinated by the success and the impact that her father had when he was on the stage.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It does.
And if you really, you know, idolize somebody, what better thing than to marry their daughter?
Right.
Seriously.
Right.
Such a pleasure to talk to you. Keep in touch and keep us posted on all the books, because I'm sure there are more in you. But this one, Before You Judge Me, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days. Tavis Smiley, such a pleasure to talk to you.
Bill and Wendy, thank you both. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you, sir. You
bye
too.
Bye now.
That's Tavis Smiley. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Always put something French sounding on it. That's what I do.
I put Gerard Depardieu
on your
neck.
You'll get crushed.
He choked me.
Oh, man.
Couldn't breathe.
What an ugly ending to a story. I don't know that we'll ever, I'll be honest, Tavis Smiley's book sounds extremely entertaining. We just got the book today, so
yes.
Neither of us have read it yet. But I don't think we'll ever know the answers to the questions that we were pondering earlier about his involvement with these weird sleepovers.
They were weird, but I mean, you heard he's still like regretting the lack of childhood he had. I mean, you know, he had a bunch of brothers, and I don't know how you were when you were younger with your brother, but in what I'm experiencing with two teenage boys,
right.
Sometimes they beat the heck out of each other. Sometimes they lay on the bed next to each other playing video games. I mean, there's
and that can be within a minute of each other,
yeah.
Right?
And there's something for that, you know, camaraderie and closeness that I feel Michael didn't have. Tito was never a cuddler.
Tito was not a cuddler. Jermaine, yes. Jackie, sometimes. Marlon, if you got him on the right time.
Jermaine was a looker, too, in my opinion, one of the best-looking Jacksons, and I'm sure he had a lot of bitterness that Michael made it and he didn't.
I would imagine,
he had a
solo
career, sort of. He's still trying to do some stuff out there.
Right.
And then you got LaToya, who is crazy.
Yeah.
And Janet, who's awesome, but changed forever the way we do radio.
Right.
Because of the something slip.
Right, right. I just think it's weird when you're a grown man and your circle of friends is Brooke Shields, Elizabeth Taylor, and a monkey. That's kind of hard to sell as a night out on the town.
Okay, do you see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah,
I mean, again, like, just it's like a fantasy land because he's like...
Well, you saw the house. His house looked like Disneyland.
Neverland.
Neverland, yeah, he made it look like Disneyland.
But he, you know, I don't see that he went to... Great America wasn't around when he was growing up in Gary.
No.
Was Fairyland still over in Summit or wherever that was?
Yeah,
or
I don't
Kitty
know.
Land?
Yeah, they had those.
Was the place with the chutes. Everyone always talks about the chutes. Yeah.
That was, what's the name of it? It was the amusement park just north of here.
River something?
Riverview. Yeah. Riverview.
Well, so he probably never got over here, so he wanted to have his own amusement park. It's like he didn't see himself as a grown man. I'm really going with that.
But don't you think that there were a lot of other child stars that didn't go down that same path? I mean, we have had our fair share of child stars that have had some issues.
Yes.
And, you know, whether it be substance abuse or other related issues. But still, I mean, a lot of child stars and, you know.
And none to the extreme
really go down
that Michael
direct.
Went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't do drugs. They all had drugs. He wanted amusement park and cuddling and just to be a kid
remember
again.
Remember the toxicology report. I mean, legal or illegal, I guess, drugs.
What?
I mean, he had drugs in his system.
Well, the prescription drugs, though. Same with Prince. And that's what I was telling Tavis Smiley. When you hear drugs, you're like, oh, God, they didn't seem like someone who used drugs.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they were prescribed. It's not like they were shooting up or smoking weed.
Right.
It was... Listen, if a doctor tells you to do something, don't you think you can trust it?
Within reason. Within some reason. I'd meet with my friends, with Brooke Shields, with Elizabeth Taylor, with
You're
my monkey.
You're just jealous. You would have loved to have hung out
with Elizabeth Taylor and a monkey?
And Brooke Shields when she was younger.
Yeah,
she was
maybe.
Very attractive, although her mom would have scared me.
Right, Terry Shields.
Get away from her.
Right.
She was protective
you with
and
the
mean.
Monkey and the girl from National Velvet. Get away from my kid. All right, let's take a quick break, and we've got a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Do you know my stomach goes
into
twists when I hear this song now?
I know you get a little nervous that subliminally, since we're going to be talking about Donald Trump, subliminally people will hear this, Hail to the Chief, and go, well, he's the next president. I got to vote for him. I heard them playing the theme song on the radio there.
Anyone can vote for whom they want. I'll tell you right now, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. Am I supposed to tell people that?
You're not supposed to.
Okay, I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
All right.
But he's going to be our next president.
Scott Dickers may be able to answer that question. Scott Dickers is one of the founding editors of The Onion, which is fantastic, and we'll get to in a little bit. Now has a new book out called Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. Scott, is it possible, Wendy, what Wendy just said could be true? Will Donald Trump be our next president?
I agree. I think
you think so?
Yeah, I don't think he... would allow himself to be beaten by a woman.
Oh, that's interesting. I've never heard that before.
What you imagine what that would do to his ego. He can't. He cannot let that happen. So he's going to pull out all the stops.
Is it just the idea of him losing in general, or is it the fact that it would be a woman that would beat
him?
Well,
that makes it double.
Yeah.
Double
bad.
Whammy.
That's a double whammy.
He's losing twice.
I mean, just imagine that. The rest of his days, people think the name Donald Trump, they think loser, lost to a woman.
Lost to a girl.
Just tell me how is he gonna live with that?
And
he can't.
I mean, look at all his arguments. He acts like an 8-year-old on the playground. So that's exactly true. No girl's gonna be me.
And that's the sort of kid that would, if he had the power to, would burn down the playground.
Right.
He would. After the loss,
he would. Now you've noticed this. This is a tactical thing, and I don't know if it's his idea or whose idea this was. But when he goes up to make a speech, any kind of a speech now after he wins a state primary or something, he puts the beautiful ladies behind him. He puts his wife, he puts his daughter, he finds people who are beautiful women and he puts them behind him. Yeah. So that's something, isn't it?
Totally. I mean, there's so much fascinating staging going on with him.
Yeah.
The beautiful ladies, the toadies.
Yeah.
You know, who come out beforehand, who are just these sort of like Trump squared people. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like this guy Miller and some of these other people. I'm surprised he doesn't have that pastor who was all about let's burn the gays to death
out there
before he goes on. It's just like these rabid people that are just off the spectrum politically. They're not even like right or whatever he is, libertarian. They're just nuts. They're just these people who are like, you know, let's burn it all down. Get everybody out who's not just like us.
How soon after he names his vice presidential nominee and it's not Chris Christie, does Chris Christie turn on him?
I think Chris Christie has made his bed, and he is a diehard toady.
Yeah.
And he'll stand behind that VP like a dope.
But what's in it for him at that point?
A cabinet spot or something.
I think right now it's Trump will beat him. He'll beat him up.
Yeah?
If he doesn't
comes
do
to that.
That. That's what that's what the situation is now.
Wow.
He'll give him a wedgie. So now he's just there to preserve his own physical health.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know where to start on some of the stuff in this book, Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. Why don't we talk about how you compiled all these things? It's like a helpful guide to everything we need to know when he becomes president.
Exactly, which, you know, we're all going to need. Because I think right now a lot of people are in denial. If you try to talk to them about it, they're like, oh, I don't want to talk about it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I can't even think about it. They see his picture and they go, oh, I can't even look. And they're not going to be able to do that after November when he's our president-elect. So this book is a helpful service to those people who have blocked out all this Donald Trump information up until now to really let it sink in. Like, okay, here's the reality. Here's what life is going to be like. Here's what you have to look forward to. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there about some of the new departments he's going to create in the government. He's going to cut a lot, you know, but we can look forward to the Women's Council on what is it? The Council on Women's Weight, Menstruation and Fitness.
Oh, will there be like a council like that? A committee like that?
Yeah. Department of Barron's Hot Babysitters, you know, some things like that. And the book is in sections. So there's one section on Trump as president. So we get to hear a little bit about what his speech is going to be like when he's inaugurated, and a whole list of things he's going to throw out when he moves in. Things like, you know, any Muslimy rugs,
yes,
that sort of thing.
They must go.
And then there are other sections on just how life is going to be different. So Trump on science, you know, and his main thing there is, look, if Einstein was so smart, why wasn't he rich?
Good question.
So we're going to be taking science to task under Trump, and he's going to make science great again.
Oh, good.
And there's a big section on the environment where we learn things like how Trump is going to melt the glaciers even faster. Because nobody melts glaciers faster than Trump.
Right.
You can't beat Trump.
Right. He's the best.
He is the best. And there's a section on the military.
Yeah.
Where we learn many things, including how Trump could have won every major war in U.S. history in under 3 days. And then there's a
well, he has a way. Anytime something like that comes up, whenever they ask him, I know you have plans, but how are you going to do it? He's so vague about all these plans.
Right.
We'll just do it. We'll just explain to him
that we're 8-year-old on the playground.
Yeah,
I'll just do it. That's how.
That's how I'll do it. You don't need to know more than that.
Yeah, we get a copy in the book of his Trump Care brochure. Because, you know, it's going to replace Obamacare.
Yeah.
And it has the plan specifics right there.
What does it say?
I'll read them to you. It says, it's something wonderful. It's better than Obamacare.
Yeah.
So great. Trump knows many doctors, the best in the world, and they all agree Trump Care will be great. Obamacare bad.
Yeah.
And the last specific is simply Trump.
That's all we need.
This is so accurate, though. This is how he speaks.
And we've got he's got a new citizenship test now. If people come in, you know, want to become citizens.
Oh, can you ask
a
question or two from that?
There's a few questions from here. Here's one. Are you from Eastern Europe? Yes or no? If yes, are you a woman? Yes or no? If yes, have you done any modeling?
Oh.
Yes or no? If yes, that's very interesting. Would you like to have dinner with the president? Yes or no? If yes, I will pick you up at 8.
We have to take a break. Scott Dicker's in the studio, founding editor of The Onion and an Onion-based book, Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. He's going to be president, Bill. Can you safely say he's not going to be?
I'm hoping not, but we'll have to see.
It's not an official Onion book, I should say.
Oh, it's okay. Not.
Yeah, I left The Onion and did this book on my own, but it's oniony.
Yes,
it is
oniony.
You can say.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well said. All right. More with Scott Dicker's next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Scott Dicker's is with us, founding editor of The Onion. His new book is called Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. And it says right on there, this book is worth many billions of dollars.
And a quote from Donald J. Trump, I know words, I have the best words. I remember when he said that. Some of this stuff does not have to be made up.
Right.
That's what's so fun.
Right. It writes itself.
Well, it kind of makes it hard to write a humor book about him when he's inherently funny. Typically,
you can't parody.
Yeah, and you can't hyperbolize a walking hyperbole.
Yeah.
But we tried, and I think we did pretty well. I think it's pretty funny.
Talk about the timing, though, because there was a time. I mean, you obviously wrote this book a little while ago, not just yesterday, but people were telling you, yeah, but when Trump is gone, no one's going to buy this book, right?
Right. Last summer when we started on it, everybody said, you know, he's going to be totally gone by summer 2016. What are you thinking? So, yeah, we couldn't get it published. And we kind of had to find this very sort of unconventional method of getting it published so that we could put it out really quickly. And
it looks great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a wonderful experience. And I hope that we sell a lot of books up until November, and then I hope nobody's interested in Trump.
That it's in the dollar
bin.
But
I fear that we'll be selling books for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Or 8.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It very well could happen.
Yeah. And can we talk first just a second about some of the trolls and some of the...
yeah, sure. Yeah.
People. Well, so...
By the way, we're getting some texts like hating on you big time and the book and hating on us and, you know, saying that when I said who I was voting for, that I'm irritating 50% of the audience. Guys, do your research and you get your vote. Rock the vote. You get to do it. It's your vote. But I don't have to do what I don't want to do when it comes to a vote.
Right. And we can write what we want to write. And we can
Scott,
say
I vote for Barry Goldwater every 4 years and I'm not changing my mind.
But in November, when Trump gets elected, we won't be able to say what we want to say anymore because we'll get sued by Trump and we'll get put in jail. And we won't be able to write books about Trump that make fun of Trump anymore. But yeah, I've been an equal opportunity offender most of my comedy career, never getting too partisan. And I just don't see where like these trolls and these haters are coming from because they're in this, I don't know, alternate universe or imaginary universe where Trump is this legitimate presidential candidate who they support because they're a Republican or whatever. He's not. Like he's nuts. And he's a demagogue. And anyone who knows anything about history knows that this is not a good road we're going down. Like, let's ban people who don't look like us or have a different religion than us. That is so un-American.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's partisan to say that. I think it's just a fact that the First Amendment to our Constitution is freedom of religion. So what's he going to do? He's going to ban Muslims? Like, this is just outrageous.
It is, but it's also bad to call these people trolls if they support him because that's who they believe to be the right thing. And there's always two sides to every story.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's what I don't understand. Another thing I don't understand about them. I listen to a lot of right-wing radio, you know, like Hannity and Rush and stuff like that, and I just find that so entertaining. They might say something pro-Trump, and they're going off about how great Trump is, and bashing a candidate that I support, say Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine like writing them a mean email and saying, you're going to burn in hell for making... Like, what kind of a mind responds that way? It's like we all have the freedom to talk about politics. Let's talk and be civil about it. I just don't get it.
But how did it come to this where people are willing to fight? Like, did Woodrow Wilson have people who said, you better not make fun of Woodrow Wilson? Did Herbert Hoover have people who go, if you even say one bad thing about Herbert Hoover, I'm coming after you? Why are people so angry all the time?
There has always been that strain, but it definitely has peaked up a little bit. I feel like we're still fighting the Civil War.
Yeah.
I still feel like conservatives and liberals on the extremes, and a lot of these Trump people are on the extreme right,
yeah,
cannot understand the other extreme side. They think that it's harmful to America. They think that it's evil.
Yeah.
And there's just no coming together for those people. And I do feel like that, and that strain has always been with us, but I do feel like it's gotten more heated in recent years.
How telling is it that when Donald Trump is referring to the people who are his target, he doesn't say my voters, he doesn't say my constituents, he doesn't say my followers, he says my fans. I think that is so telling.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's
but
really
they are his fans. It is a popularity contest. That's what this has turned into. It's kind of always been.
No, it is. It's the ultimate the presidency is the ultimate popularity contest, but I think he just views it as I'm a rock star. He's not looking at it as
he's
going to be the most important politician in the world. To him, this is the doorway to Bruce Springsteen.
Remember that great joke in Back to the Future when Marty McFly goes back to the 50s and Doc Brown figures out that he really is from the future, and it's like, of course, Ronald Reagan is your president because in order to be president, you have to look good on TV because there are TV cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
That was true then, but it's only gotten more true now because now the president is on TV every second. So Donald Trump is just taking advantage of that fact.
Yeah,
that the presidency has become much more of a popularity contest with the rise of media and the fact that everybody is a walking TV studio now.
Yep.
And you can't escape.
And 50% of the people are unhappy about the way things are going, maybe even 60-40.
Sure.
So it is kind of nice to get a fresh breath in there, someone who's not political. It just cracks me up that it's Trump. You said you had trouble publishing this at the beginning because you didn't think Trump would still be in it. I don't believe Trump thought he'd still be in it at this point. And now, you know, you got to go to the end.
Yeah.
Lose to a girl? Forget that.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, this is where we're at, and I feel like even Trump fans are enjoying this book,
Good.
Which is great. I think it's not a political book. I mean, we're here talking about our opinions. That's something different. Even Trump fans like to laugh at Trump because they know he's funny and entertaining.
He laughs at himself.
He laughs at himself, so he's a great foil, a lot of people have bought the book as gifts for their crazy uncle, and they're getting good laughs, you know? And
it's really funny.
Thank you.
Scott, you've done a great job. Scott Dicker's book is called, again, Trump's America, The Complete Loser's Guide. Buy it for your crazy uncle. It's available everywhere. Thank you, Scott. Great to meet you. We'll take a quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately something's changed. It ain't hard to
Keep going. Keep going.
Girl, and I want to make her mine.
And she's watching him with those eyes.
Keep going.
I knew you were going to do that.
Keep going. You don't need the music.
I knew Kevin was going to do that. I have so much no faith in you. I knew that's why I was hesitant.
Don't say that.
You're cute. Not that cute, though. We have tickets to go see Rick Springfield. We talked to him on his last tour, didn't we?
Yes, we did. A couple months ago, we did.
He's a big Star Wars fan. Do you know that?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did. I found that out recently. And Loverboy, Mike Reno, likes a good burger.
You know little fun facts about all the stars.
I do.
Tell me more.
Romantics.
What do you know about them?
They like to talk in their sleep.
Yeah, they do. They sang about that.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. Wow.
Yep,
you
I know it all.
You should have your own VH1 show.
Oh, I'd love to do Behind the Music.
Yeah.
I could be Nina Blackwood.
Way deeper.
Or I could be Nina Blackwood. Bow before me.
That was so mean.
She has a deep voice.
She does.
She has a very deep voice.
All right. Well, we have a pair of tickets to give away. You are off tomorrow as you celebrate your 25th wedding anniversary with your lovely wife, Terry.
Yeah.
who I just heard, you weren't putting your message on a speakerphone, but I heard, hi, honey.
Yep.
You guys are like two little lovebirds. We're
crazy in love, Wendy. 25 years later, still crazy in love.
That's awesome, and congratulations. So Bill will be off tomorrow. So we have a pair of tickets to give away to this big show at the Grand Victoria Casino in Elgin. It's part of their summer concert series. So since you're so good at hosting these games, we should do it today.
We have a game called I Wish That I Had Jesse's Game. Because of the, well, you know why. I don't have to tell you why. So here's what we need you to do. You need to pick up a phone and dial these numbers in this order. 312-981-7200. I'm going to let you pick two random numbers somewhere between 1 and 10.
I got
and
it.
And those will be our contestants.
Your 25th anniversary, so let's do caller 2, caller 5.
That's perfect.
We
That's
made
perfect.
A big deal about it. I did not get you a gift. This is your gift, mentioning it 100
times
today.
You should have gotten me a gift.
I'm not giving you a gift.
Seems a little empty, but that's all right. That's okay.
So the second caller, caller 2, 312-981-7200, and caller 5, 312-981-7200, that same number. Mm-hmm. Are we going to put them up against each other?
Yeah, we'll pit them up against each other for fabulous prizes. And that fabulous prize, as you mentioned, tickets to see a great show.
And it's happening July 3rd, so listen to me right now. If you cannot go on July 3rd to Grand Victoria Casino in Elgin, don't bother
that's
playing.
That's Sunday.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, that's this Sunday.
I'm leaving for Nashville, otherwise I'd go.
No, you can't. You can't win. Oh. You're part of the show.
All right. Do we want to take a quick break and come back? Do we want to start it? How do we want
no,
to do
we can,
it?
No, let's play it now. Let's do it right now. I don't want people to brush up on their Jesse trivia.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That wouldn't be fair.
All right. Well, let's meet our first contestant. And he, I'm assuming it's a he. He goes by the name of Terry. And hi, Terry.
Actually, it's a girl.
Oh,
Wendy, you were off by one.
I know, but it was Terry with a Y, so I guessed boy instead of Terry with an I. How do you spell your name?
With a Y.
All right, I'm an idiot.
All right, 50 points for Terry. She spelled her name properly. You're leading, Terry. Congratulations.
All right, awesome.
Bill, this is when you like to get to know a little about Terry.
Yeah.
The girl.
Terry, tell us a little something about yourself so that people at home can root for you.
My very first album was Rick Springfield.
Oh.
I've seen him in concert four times.
Wow,
oh, man.
A big fan.
Yes, I am.
A huge fan. What's your favorite Rick Springfield song?
I've Done Everything for You.
I've done everything for you.
Terry, that's true, but what is your favorite Rick Springfield song? All right, excellent. Well, good. I hope you win, but I'm going to say that to the next contestant, too.
Whose name is Annette.
That must be a guy. Annette, are you a guy or a girl?
Very much a girl.
All right. All right.
Do you like Rick Springfield?
Yes, I do, but I'm feeling kind of intimidated because I'm not that well-versed.
No, but here's the good thing. You've never seen Rick Springfield in concert then, right, Annette?
No, I have not.
All right, both so girls deserve to win.
This is great because people know at home you got one girl, Terry, who's seen him four times, a huge fan. Another girl, Annette, also a fan, but has never seen him. So that's the disparity. Good. This will be great. Are you both ready? I'll explain
yes.
the rules. All right?
Okay.
Because of his song, Jesse's Girl, it's called I Wish That I Had Jesse's, I Wish I Had Jesse's Game. All the answers, every answer, and there's 10 of them, have the word Jesse somewhere within the answer, okay? So I'll read you a question, and the answer has Jesse in it. When you know the answer, just shout out your name, either Terry or Annette, okay?
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Here's how the scoring works. Round one is worth 100 points. Round two is worth 200 points, all the way up to 1,000. At the end, most points wins. Here we go. For 100 points, question number one is this. Again, Terry and Annette, call out your name when you know the answer.
Should we test the buzzers?
Yeah, see if the buzzers work.
Terry, try your buzzer.
Terry.
Annette?
Annette.
Very
Annette,
good.
Are you driving right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, no, that's illegal. You're going to jail.
She has pulled over. It's just the sound of the cars passing.
Oh, is that
Maybe
what
it
you
is? Roll your window.
Correct.
All right, window's up.
All right.
And try your buzzer again, Annette.
Okay. Annette.
Perfect.
And Terry, you are currently performing surgery, is that correct? That seems dangerous to be doing a contest, but that's fine. All right. Question one is worth 100 points. Call out your name when you know the right answer to this question with the word Jesse in it. This Chicago-based politician and reverend is founder and president of the Rainbow Coalition.
Annette? Jesse Jackson.
Absolutely right, Annette. You lead 100 points to zero. Question two is worth 200 points. Here goes. This track and field athlete won four Olympic gold.
Annette.
Terry
was
Terry.
First.
Jesse Owens.
Yes. Jesse Owens. I'll read you the whole question. This track and field athlete won 4 Olympic gold medals, confounding a certain German leader who did not see that coming. All right. Question 3. Wendy, I get points for that. Question 3 is worth 300 points. Terry, you lead 200 to 100. Here's for 300 points. He is a bank robber and an outlaw from the Old West.
Annette,
go ahead.
Jesse James.
Jesse James is right. Very, very good. Question 4 is worth 400 points. Right now, Annette leads 400 to Terry's 200, but that could all change after question 4. Question 4 reads like this. He is Sandra Bullock's boyfriend and ex-husband.
Annette, I heard first. Annette first.
Go on, Annette.
What's your answer?
Jesse James.
Jesse James is right. I know they both had the same answer, Jesse James, but the questions were slightly different. So
you're a sly fox.
I'm a sly fox is what I'm trying to say. Annette, currently you are a leader with 800 to Terry's 200.
Come on, Terry,
but there's
check
still
your buzzer.
Big points on the board. Question 5, this is the halfway mark. Question 5 is worth 500 points. If you get this right, Terry, you trail by only 100. Here goes. This curly-haired actor played Mark Zuckerberg in this... Annette?
Terry.
Wait.
I heard Annette, but it sounded like...
It sounded like you were like somebody's choking you, Annette. Are you okay?
Yeah, but I don't think I have the right answer for...
What do we do, Wendy? Do we go to Annette or not?
Well, I heard Annette first.
Annette,
so
go ahead.
She should say it. You don't get points taken away.
Okay. I don't remember his last name. So.
Oh, I can't give it to you then. You have to. I'll read the rest of the question for you, Terry. I'll read you the whole question. This curly-haired actor played Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network and recently was seen as Lex Luthor in Batman versus Superman.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Absolutely right, Jesse Eisenberg.
Can I just say I'm so happy you didn't say Lex Luthor. I don't like when people say that.
Lex Luthor.
Thank
All right.
you.
What a close game we have. We're halfway through, and Annette has 800 points to Terry's 700. Only 100 points separating our two contestants. Here's question 6. It's worth 600 points. Again, every answer has the word Jesse somewhere within it. Here goes. Not only is he Illinois' current Secretary of State, but he'll tumble
Annette.
For you.
Annette.
Annette, go ahead.
Jesse White.
Yes.
Bill, you're killing it
I'm
today.
I'm very funny. All right, Annette, you have 1,400 points. Terry, you have 700. However, if you get this question right, we'll be tied at 1,400. Question 7 is worth 700 points. Remember, they're getting harder as we go along, so this is a little bit of a challenge. Here goes. Question 7. Nicknamed The Body, this loud pro wrestler...
Annette. Jesse Ventura.
Absolutely right.
Well,
very
you know
nice.
You're Jesse's, Annette.
Very, very nice.
That's one of my favorite names.
Terry, you're not out of it. I know that Annette has a good lead, 2,100 to 700 for you, but it's not over yet. Question 8 is worth 800 points. Here goes. Born Sally Lowenthal, she took
Terry.
The...
Terry.
Terry.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Wow.
There you go.
Very, very nice. The rest of the clue was she took the last name of her favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle to start her own talk show.
She did not.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. All right, Annette, you have 2,100. Terry, you have 1,500. There are 2 questions left on the board. You could still win this, Terry. You're not down by that much, only 600. So question 9 is worth 900 points. Here is the clue. Walter White's meth-making partner on Breaking Bad, his last...
Gary. I heard Annette.
Annette?
Oh, who are you conferring with? Who are you cheating with, Annette?
Nobody. I'm by myself.
You're cheating with yourself. That's sick.
I know, aren't I?
You're
I
sick. You sick person.
I heard your buzzer. You just said your buzzer. You don't know the answer.
No answer? Oh, no. All right, no answer. Here's what that means, Terry. I will read you the whole question. You can get this right. Here goes. Walter White's meth-making partner on Breaking Bad, his last name makes it sound like he's a fan of a traditionally feminine color. What is the right answer?
Pink? Jesse Pink?
Oh.
Make it longer? Pink?
Jesse Pinky.
Jesse Pinky. It is not Jesse Pinky.
No.
We were looking for Jesse Pinkman, not Jesse Pinky. All right. Here's what this means. Here's what this means. There's one question left, and it's worth 1,000 points. Right now, Annette has 2,100. Terry has 1,500. So whoever gets this question right is the winner. If neither of you get this question right, it goes to Annette, who has sounded like she's been strangled on two different episodes. Wendy, go ahead. Do you have something to add in?
No, not yet.
All right. Here goes. For 1,000 points, this is our last answer. Again, Annette with 2,100, Terry with 1,500. The answer will have Jesse somewhere within it. Best known for his portrayal of Dr. Jackson Avery on TV's Grey's Anatomy, he got a lot of press last week for his stirring speech about racism at the BET Awards.
This is a tough one.
This is a very tough one.
And I heard it on... I was listening to Dean, and
Do you want to call Dean? You can use that. You can use a call of Dean.
I know, because I heard it because Justin Timberlake got in trouble.
I'll say Terry.
Oh, Terry, go ahead.
I know what she's talking about, too. I think his name is Wallace.
Is it Jesse Wallace? You have to say it. I can't say it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jesse Wallace.
It is not Jesse Wallace. It is not Jesse Wallace. Annette, you don't even have to guess, but you can if you want to. Do you want to try a guess?
No, I would be totally.
You don't need to.
Annette,
it was so close, but Annette is our winner with 2,100 points to Terry's 1,500.
Oh,
what does this mean, Wendy?
All right, well, stand by, because Annette, we have a pair. You've never seen Rick Springfield before, right?
No, I haven't.
Well, because of us, you're going to. Pair of tickets to see Rick Springfield with special guest Loverboy, The Romantics. They're all part of the Grand Victoria Casino and Elgin Summer Concert Series this Sunday. July 3rd, hear the hits like Jesse's Girl.
Oh, my God.
Don't talk to strangers. Get tickets online at grandvictoriacasino.com.
Wendy, Kevin, our producer, has just entered with a flurry into our studio, and I don't know what's up.
Wait,
Kevin, what's wrong?
Hang on, girls. What's
Hold
up?
Hold on, ladies.
I was just hanging out in Justin Kaufman's office.
Why wouldn't you?
Right. It's what I do when I'm producing.
Right.
I found an extra pair just laying around.
Well, he has a pair of tickets to give away also. He does not?
Well, not anymore.
What do you want to do?
You guys tell me.
Terry, should we take Justin Kaufman's tickets and give them to you so you can see Rick Springfield 5 times?
Heck yes.
All right.
Why not? All right.
All right. Can we leave your number with Justin Kaufman so when he yells at somebody,
like
he can call you?
That would be great.
All right.
You're both going, girls.
Woo! That's awesome.
Very nice. Very, very nice.
Happy girls, happy life.
That's what people say. That's what people always say. All right, hang on the line, and conniving Kevin, who stole these tickets from Justin Kaufman, will speak to both of you. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, hang on. Good work, Kevin.
This is going to create a problem here at the office, but look, we made listeners happy, and isn't that really what it's all about? Really?
Yeah. And he took something from us, too.
What did he take?
Can we take a break really quick?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Payback is sweet, especially on the radio.
Yes, it is. More in a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wasn't that nice, making not one, but two different listeners' dreams come true? They get to see Rick Springfield and Loverboy and The Romantics. That felt nice.
That is a good feeling, and thanks to Justin Kaufman, who... We were interviewing Tavis Smiley earlier today to talk about that Before You Judge Me book, The Triumph and Tragedy of Michael Jackson's Last Days.
Yeah, right.
We looked all over the office to look at our two books because sometimes we didn't have time to read it, but we'd like to have it in our hands when we're interviewing
Absolutely.
The person. And we couldn't find the second book.
Right.
And I know we got two.
Right.
And Kevin happened to walk down to the Justin Kaufman office.
Yeah.
Was Pete Zimmerman in yet or no? And all of a sudden, our book is just sitting there.
It was in his office.
And Justin helped himself to my Twizzlers.
He took your book and your Twizzlers?
Yeah, that's so we took his tickets.
Yeah.
I think it's fair.
Yeah, life balances out, doesn't it? When
it
you
sure
think
does.
About it, sure, it does. So,
any final words for your lovely wife, Terry, before we take our last break? Because you will be off tomorrow celebrating. Today is your 25th anniversary.
Today's our 25th anniversary, so we're leaving right after the show for a romantic getaway.
Tahiti, Michigan.
It's just Michigan. It's not Tahiti, Michigan. It's just Michigan. But, I'm extremely fortunate.
Did you
That's
buy
all.
A new smart outfit for your or snappy? What is it? Snazzy?
No, I didn't. I ended up not getting anything. I looked at Garanimals. They put out the clothes that I like to wear, and there was nothing that I saw, so I just went with this. And that's
You
it.
Look very nice.
Well, thank you.
Did you get sexy undergarments?
Yes. Lover's Lane. With the banana splits on them.
Want some of
really
my Twizzlers
pretty.
For the
yes.
weekend?
Yes. Yes.
Well, happy anniversary
Thank
to you
very
and
much. It's very kind of you. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.